Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. I am your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell, and then you got your morning drive at 6 with the great Steve Cochran. How are you? Welcome to WGN, and it is a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday is in effect. You have a Triple Play Thursday, and that is one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Joining us in just a couple of minutes is Dan Feinberg. He visits with us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Lots of TV to talk about with Dan. Always a great time to visit with him. So that's coming up in just a few minutes. Also, a little bit later on, we are going to do some Halloween stuff. We'll talk about movies that sent people running out of the theater. We're going to talk about some of the more popular and most searched Halloween costumes of this year, 2019. And we got some audio of an actual audience watching the movie Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween, back in the day when it came out in the theaters in 78. And you're going to hear their response to how they freaked out during that movie. We also have a bunch of idiotically expensive versions of cheap products that we're going to talk about. All that and more. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your Triple Play Thursday request. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is constantly updated. It's interactive. You should like us right now and follow us. It's Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's all coming up right here on the show this morning, on a Thursday morning. And so there it is. We are live. Tom Hush is my producer. He's answering the phone right now, so he can't speak to us. But Tom is producing the show as he does every morning. He will be off tomorrow, Friday morning. And Ben Anderson will be filling in for him. And he will be off also on Monday morning. He's going out of town. Let me say hello to Tom. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, Nick. How are you doing, man?
I'm okay. What are you, you're going out of town?
Yeah, I'm going to the, and I'm probably going to butcher the name here, the Adirondack Film Festival.
No, that's right.
Oh, I got it?
Yeah, Adirondack, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I've had a hell of a time trying to pronounce that.
There's some mountains out there, buddy.
Yeah, I hear, is that considered Appalachia, or is it a little bit too north of that?
It might be considered. Yeah, it might be considered that. I'm not an expert in that, but mm-hmm. but I know where you're. I know exactly where you're headed.
Yeah, Glens Falls, New York. Ah. So it's going to be my first time ever being in New York State, not in an airport.
Wait.
I've never been in New York City, and I've never been anywhere in New York State.
Wait. You've never been to Manhattan? You've never been to New York City?
No, sir.
Oh man. That needs to be rectified.
Well, during my original travel plans, I was going to fly into New York and take an Amtrak. So I was going to have to, you know, figure out how to get from Queens to Manhattan to get to Penn Station.
It's not hard, man.
Okay. Well, I was nervous. I was super nervous. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to fly into Albany, New York.
No. It's not. I mean, you can get to the boroughs. You can get to all the boroughs in New York really easily.
I'm super intimidated by New York. I want to go. There's so much I want to see there, but I'm super intimidated by it.
It's a great city, man.
So I've heard.
Yeah. No, it's great. You got to go. You got to go. Queens is awesome, too. Yeah. So, well, have fun. You're going to be gone all weekend. And you'll be off on Monday as well. So yeah, Ben will be filling in tomorrow.
Yep, yep.
For all the regular Friday features. And then he'll be in on Monday as well. But you'll be back Tuesday morning.
Correctamundo.
So, but he'll be, okay, thank you, Fonz.
Is that not good enough for you?
So anyway, but he's here this morning, this Thursday morning, and he'll be producing all morning long. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And in the newsroom all morning long is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Doing very well.
Good. You've been to New York, right?
Just once recently.
Went oh, that's right. Ago. You just, that's right. That was your first time too.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I agree. That's a very special city.
Yeah.
A very special city. And I loved it. So
yeah. You were only there for a short time.
It was a day trip.
A day trip.
Yeah. I flew in that morning and flew back that evening.
Yeah.
And it, remember it was like 6 minutes before the blackout.
Oh, that's right. So you got out of town right before the blackout hit.
We jumped in a cab, and by the time we got to the airport and I got out of the plane, I saw the big blackout on the news.
Yeah, that's right.
I did the timing, and I figured it out. We got out of there 10 minutes before it happened.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, I was lucky.
That's really crazy.
But yeah, good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. You got to go, Tom, really.
Yeah, I'm planning. I've got some friends that work in New York but live in Jersey, and so I do a little bit of both because I never really explored New England. I've been to Boston,
yeah,
but which I loved. I had a great time in Boston, but I've never really seen that part of the country. We were mostly
when you were in Boston, did you go to Fenway?
Yeah, oh yeah, we went to Fenway, went to the Garden. You know, it was really great. Went on all these historical walks. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful city. Horribly confusing.
Yeah,
it's all curved street. It's all very colonial.
Yeah. Were you driving?
I was not driving.
Oh, okay.
So I was walking, but still, I was like, "Wow, how could anybody drive in this place?"
Yeah,
and, we were. Is it? I can't remember which side is the more Irish side.
Because south.
Yeah.
Yeah. Southeast.
We were always steps away from a pub, and even the Indian restaurant was called O'Houlihan's. Like, it was ridiculous.
I was. I remember. I've been to Boston a few times. We went one time. This was back. My buddies and I went on a road trip, a baseball trip. So we rented a van, and six of us just drove down the East Coast and went to different baseball stadiums and saw games. And, you know, obviously we went to the Hall of Fame. And Boston was one of the stops we had. And this was one of the times I went there. And I remember we were walking down the street. This is Boston right here. Walking down the street, we're heading to Fenway. We're right outside of Fenway, and we're walking to the gate to get in to see a game. We're walking. I had really long hair at the time. This was 1992, so I was wearing like flannels. I had a flannel shirt and like, you know, Doc Martens, and I'm walking down the street in 1992, really long hair. And I didn't even say anything to anybody, and there's some guys that are walking, you know, towards us as we're going to walk past, and he goes, "Get a haircut!" Just screamed at me. You know, I didn't know. I don't know. I didn't say anything with the guy. Didn't have any kind of conversation. Nothing. All of a sudden, he just goes, "Get a haircut," and walks away.
I'm surprised he didn't end it with "Go Pats."
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to Boston, everybody. Get a haircut. Great city, though. Great city. And one of my favorite bands ever came out of that town. That would be Buffalo Tom. They're out of Boston. So, okay. All right, well, there you go. Tom's going to be off for tomorrow and Monday. Ben will be sitting in for him, but he's here all this morning, and so is Vic. He's in the newsroom, and I am your host, and we're going to take a break here because Dan Feinberg is going to join us for his biweekly visit. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and lots of TV talk to come up right after this on 720 WGN. TV party tonight! We're going to have a TV party tonight! All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to do some Halloween stuff this morning. I'm going to bust out Fartenstein and Count Fartula. And we're going to talk about, we're going to actually listen to audio of people who were actually watching Halloween. It's fantastic. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, and movies that send people running out of the theater, and Halloween costumes, and other really cool stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. It's time for our biannual. Yeah, every couple of years we talk to Dan Feinberg. No, it's every couple of weeks we talk to Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at The Fine Print. And that's F-I-E-N. And always a lot of TV to talk about. So let's bring Dan on because we're not going to be able to talk to him for another 2 years, according to my brain. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you. It could be 6 months. We could talk twice a year also. I believe it's one of those confusing, it could either be every 2 years or twice a year kind of thing.
No, that's right. Yes, absolutely. And now I've completely screwed up everything. Now I don't know where I am. I feel like I'm Doc Brown now. I don't know what's going on.
Exactly. Much, much more accurate.
Yeah. How you been?
Okay, just watching lots and lots of TV. How
yeah.
you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Let's get to it. Primal. That's it. That's that.
Okay.
I was absolutely blown away by it. I think it's great. Tell everybody about Primal. I know you reviewed it and you mentioned it in passing last time we talked, but my God, is it good.
I'm glad I slipped in the reference to it at the end of our last conversation.
Yeah.
So at least I was able to get that in. If you don't know, it is Genndy Tartakovsky's latest Adult Swim animated series. Genndy Tartakovsky, of course, is Samurai Jack, Star Wars Clone Wars, Dexter's Laboratory, etc. And it is the story of a post-Neanderthal caveman who kind of makes friends with the dinosaur, and that's what it is. It's entirely dialogue-free, and it's really just stunningly beautiful and stunningly effective, and really one of the best things somebody could check out on TV at this moment, I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was compelled. I just was, I thought it was, like, really exciting, and it's really brutal, too, which I think took me by surprise at how brutal it was. Well, I mean, the very first episode, I was like, whoa, and within the first 5 minutes. But it's just so beautifully animated, and I love the fact that there's no dialogue, and yet you get to know these two main characters. It's beautifully realized. It's just top-notch. It's top-notch stuff. I really love it.
No, without any question, it is definitely not for the smallest of kids. There's
yes.
a lot of broken bones and flesh being torn off and blood splattering everywhere. So, you know, if you have a low threshold for such things, maybe not for you. But the animation is beautiful. It's the music is fantastic. The sound design is tremendous because, again, with no dialogue, you have to compensate in some ways. I have yet to watch the fifth episode. Is the fifth episode as good as the rest?
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, I'm just, I was, you know, I didn't know it was only going to be, it was going to be so short-lived. I didn't know it was only going to be five parts, and that makes me, I mean, that's the only thing that makes me sad about this, is that it's not going to be longer, so.
I don't think it's an endlessly resilient thing. I think that this was a wonderful contained idea. I think it holds up amazingly well. Again, I've seen four of the five parts, and I think that it sort of is already by the fourth part kind of, I don't want to say straying away from reality, because let's be real, this is not particularly real,
yeah.
not particularly historically accurate. But I could already sense by the fourth episode where things might have been in episode 25 or something. And I don't know that I needed to go there. I kind of loved the idea that he wanted to do this. He wanted to do it as an event, and Adult Swim let him do it. And I think it comes together extraordinarily well.
Yeah, it's great stuff. It's Primal on Adult Swim. And I can't recommend it highly enough. It really is pretty extraordinary. So I wanted to get that one. I wanted to jump on that one right away because I it's still like, you know, I'm still, it's still in my brain as I've watched it over the week. So, really great stuff.
It's very good, and more people should be talking about it. It's the kind of thing where if you are a fan of animation for grown-ups, you really want to check it out.
There's no question about it. It's exceptional. That's Primal on Adult Swim, and it's really, really great. Hey, how about that second season of Succession, huh?
They really did not fall off very far from the first season, did they?
No. No. Great stuff. And I know you wrote a piece about it, about how it raised its game in season two, without any spoilers, if you can. Can you do a little summation about comparing season one to season two and just how much the show has grown or gotten better? How do you feel about it?
I think that the show just continued to ratchet up both of the things that it does well, which is present this utterly insular, completely inaccessible world of embarrassing wealth and these horrible, horrible people occupying it, while also finding ways to make the characters, I don't want to say sympathetic, because I don't really know that even after two full seasons, they're wholly sympathetic, but I think that you can find understandings of their motivations and find ways of finding empathy with their decisions, even if the world they live in has nothing to do with the world that we live in, unless you just want to go with, it's really just a show about a bunch of kids trying to make their father love them. And so people can relate to that, I suppose.
Right.
But still awful, awful people doing awful things, and so well written and so well performed and so hilarious at one moment and truly heartbreaking the next. And yeah, it continues to be a tightrope because it's the kind of show where it could just run out of the tone. Basically, the minute the tone goes too far in one direction or another, I think you probably lose these people, and maybe it becomes pandering. It tries saying, okay, you should like this character, and the minute it tries to say, okay, here's the character you're supposed to like, I think the show doesn't work anymore, and it hasn't done that. And yeah, the second season was one great episode, one great scene after another, and I don't know the last time I saw a finale, and spoiling absolutely nothing about it, that was as completely and universally adored by the people who I communicate with in social media and whatnot.
Yep.
Everybody liked it, which probably means something's wrong with it, and we all need to examine ourselves. I'm distrustful.
Yeah.
But still, everybody liked the finale who's actually still watching the show.
Yeah, no, I thought the finale was great. And this cast is unbelievable. I mean, everybody in this. What is this now eligible for Emmys for the coming year?
Oh, yes, certainly. And again, it was for last year's Emmys as well, and it did win for writing, which was well-deserved and fantastic. And, of course, last season was eligible for Golden Globes, and the Golden Globe voters mostly ignored it. I believe Kieran Culkin was nominated for a supporting actor trophy, which he would have deserved. He didn't win, but, totally deserving. I really will be looking forward to seeing what happens come next Emmy season, and also if the Golden Globe voters and if the SAG voters notice, if they're savvy enough to pay attention, because there's no excuse, for example, to not give this Screen Actors Guild ensemble nomination.
Oh, no, there's no question about it.
I don't even know how you don't do that.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. Where does Holly Hunter fit into this? Is she like a cast member, or is it going to be like a guest performance? How does that fit into the equation?
Somebody is going to have to do the math for me, because it comes down to, I don't remember if the rule is half makes you a regular cast member, or if appearing in half of the season makes you still a guest cast member. And then I don't know how many episodes she actually appeared in.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be right on the edge between whether she's going to have to be submitted as supporting actress, which I could see her getting a nomination anyway.
Yeah.
Or if she's eligible for guest, in which case I assume she walks off with a win.
Well, yeah.
Like it's over. So yeah. I don't know what exactly the eligibility line is that she's at.
Okay. Well, the show is great. I mean, it's on HBO. You can watch it on VOD, and I loved it. It crackles with energy, and the writing is so good, and the acting is so great, and it's really funny in a dark way. And I still maintain, as I believe you do, the show is a comedy, even though I know that it'll be nominated in the drama category. But I still think the show falls under black comedy. That's where I think.
I am right there with you, but I think that we probably have lost that fight, and therefore I'm just gonna say, whatever you think it is, nominate it as that, but just don't forget to nominate it for things.
Yeah, it's just great, and a really great, rousing second season for Succession, a tremendous show, and I assume it's coming back for a third on HBO.
It has indeed been renewed, and I assume we will see it roughly at this time next year.
That's great. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We started off with two of the best things that you could possibly see on TV right now with Primal and Succession. I'm sure there's stuff that's not good, but we're gonna talk about TV in general and more with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break. The news is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday will begin a little bit later. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to do a little Halloween stuff this morning, and we're also going to talk about idiotically expensive versions of cheap products. Just crazy. So anyway, that's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and on Facebook at Nick D Show, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He's kind enough to join us every other week to talk about TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So we had a review of I've not watched it, but we reviewed it when we review the movies on Monday morning. We had our buddy Eric review El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, and you did a review of it as well. I've not watched it yet because I have not seen I've not caught up with Breaking Bad in years. Sure. So still have not watched it. Although I'm a massive Aaron Paul fan, but so what did you think of El Camino?
Oh, you need to get through Breaking Bad because then you need to start on Better Call Saul. Then
right,
come
right,
on.
Right, I know. All right, I'm sorry. Okay.
Oh. I'm of several minds on it. I think that certainly of one mind is it's extremely well made. It does the things that you would want a two-hour episode of Breaking Bad to do. It's got very good suspense set pieces. It's beautifully shot. Aaron Paul continues to be simply wonderful in this role, for which he won multiple Emmys, so it's not like he's been under the radar in any particular way.
Right.
Lots of great nods to fans, cameos, both surprising and not the slightest bit surprising, etc. On the other hand, Breaking Bad was a show where Vince Gilligan and the team knew when it was ending. It ended completely and totally on the terms that they wanted to end it. And the ending that it had was the ending they wanted it to have. And I was left with no pressing questions. That doesn't mean I didn't have questions, because I'm fully accepting that the world of a TV show continues on without me in the way that life sometimes does if I leave the room. So I've never been one of those people who needed to know the minutiae of something when something was left somewhat open-ended.
Yeah.
So to me, this is an entirely unnecessary movie. But if you just sit back and watch and go, this was fun, it was pleasant to experience, yeah, it's completely satisfying as that. It is totally well made. It just does nothing that I needed it to do. It doesn't ruin the end of Breaking Bad, which is good and, you know, a relief. I think it could have if it pandered too much. It's just unnecessary, and that's okay. You know, the continuation of the Breaking Bad universe already exists. It's called Better Call Saul,
right,
and it's wonderful.
Right.
So that's what I need.
How did you feel about Robert Forrester? Is that the last part that is this the last thing he's appeared in?
I believe so. I'm not sure if he had, you know, shot an indie or something in the interim, but
yeah,
you know, he's great. He adds so much to the scenes. And you know, if you had to have a send off appearance or role or whatever, this is a good one for him. It's still very sad, obviously.
Yeah.
Because he was continuing to give great performances that added things to the things he was in. But it's it's a respectable and good and honorable send-off, and so, but definitely the timing of all of it, extremely sad.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about him, you know, the first day we were back after he passed away. It's such a great character actor, and did so many great things. And as soon as I heard the news, I watched Alligator. I had to pull Alligator out and watch that, which is, I mean, it's like one of the few leads he had, you know, carrying a movie, and it's so much fun to watch. John Sayles' script is so clever. He was terrific. Robert Forster was one of my favorites. And I'm glad to see that he's got this. You know, this was like his send off, which is great.
Well, it gave everybody the thing to latch onto as the centerpiece to all the tributes. And, you know, obviously everyone was already going to, you know, go Medium Cool and Jackie Brown and all of that.
Yeah.
But it was something else to spur the conversation. And yeah, he was just an extraordinarily valuable and always authentic and excellent character actor. And,
yeah,
you know, it's sad, and it adds gravity, honestly, to the movie that I'm not sure the movie had under other circumstances. And,
yeah,
you know, that's, I don't know, it's something, I you know, it added value, and so he adds value.
Yeah, no question.
Very
about
sad.
It. Yeah. It's on Netflix, by the way, if you are looking to watch that, and I'm sure Breaking Bad fans have already jumped on that, I would imagine. All right, we have another version of Nancy Drew. For me, in the 70s, when I was growing up, it was Parker Stevenson and one of the Cassidys, I don't remember which one, Sean, they were the Hardy Boys, and then that would be on one Sunday, and the following Sunday they would have a Nancy Drew episode, and it was Pamela Sue Martin, who I was crushing on huge when I was a kid, and I loved Nancy Drew. And then they made a movie with Emma Roberts, if I remember correctly. Was that like about 5-10 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, then I think 2012, if memory serves. But
okay,
yes, that was really and truly a thing that happened, regardless of whether anyone knows it was a thing that happened.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, Andrew Fleming directed that movie. If I'm not mistaken, who also directed...
Sounds correct, I believe.
A lot of movies that I really love, including The Craft, which is being remade. don't get me started on that. So let's talk about the new Nancy Drew. Tell everybody about it.
Well, first of all, Pamela Sue Martin does have a supporting / cameo role in it. So if that's what it's going to take to get you to watch, I don't know that it's good enough for you to want to give you incentive to watch. So.
All right. Well, that's a nice little nod. That's a nice nod to the 70s series.
It is.
Yeah.
They can't deny, because also, here's the thing. I don't know if Nancy Drew has any particular value to the as a brand name to the core CW demographic.
Sure.
So if all they're going to do is try to get some people in the door, you know, might as well throw a bone to the older viewers, the more advanced viewers.
Thank you.
The
I appreciate that.
Audiences.
Yeah. Okay.
Take your picnic, whatever you want.
Okay.
So anyway, Kennedy McMahon, who is a relative newcomer, plays Nancy Drew, who was formerly a teenage sleuth in her small coastal Maine hometown, and then she stopped sleuthing, and after her mother died, she let her grades slip, and so she's taking a gap year between high school and college, blah, 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 blah. She becomes embroiled in a mystery that only Nancy Drew can solve.
Thanks, yeah.
And that's what it is. There's a murder and stuff, and so she has to investigate it. Scott Wolf plays her father, continuing the CW's tendency to pick 80s and 90s heartthrobs and turn them into fathers so that everyone can feel old. That's what they're doing.
Right.
And a lot of the familiar names to people who read the book series, whether it's George Fan, Bess Marvin, Ned Nickerson, all of the names are dropped and yet have absolutely nothing to do with anything in the book. And really, it only occasionally has anything to do with the books. It's not all that often the Nancy Drew kind of investigation, which was always kind of fun, you know, finding hidden doors places and finding secret codes that only she could crack and
right,
stuff like that.
Right.
There's not really all that much here. It's really just kind of, I don't know, Veronica Mars was already Nancy Drew with adult themes, so this is Veronica Mars, only less good.
Right.
That's about what it is. It's not awful. There are many worse shows that I've watched multiple episodes of this fall, but I've seen two episodes of Nancy Drew, and I don't know that I need to watch any more of it. I am not invested in the mystery particularly.
Okay. All right. I was interested in it. I happen to be as we've talked about before, a massive Veronica Mars fan. You know, I kicked into the Kickstarter. I gave money to the Kickstarter thing. That's how much I like Veronica Mars. So, yeah, I just thought it was kind of interesting that you did a parallel on that, which makes sense. So
it's the logical thing, and it's what it is. It's a little bit Veronica Marsy and a little bit Riverdale-y, and it's just it's okay.
Okay.
It's not awful.
Okay. All right, great. Dan,
don't finish Breaking Bad first.
Okay. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and he is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We'll talk more with him right after this on 720 WGN. Video killed the radio star. Video killed the radio star. It's in my mind and in my car. We can't rewind. All right, welcome back, everybody. First song ever played on MTV in August of 1981, everybody. First video, I should say, ever played on MTV. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline studio and here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. It's Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday will begin. Get your requests in 312-981-7200, one artist, three songs. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Have you seen Almost Family?
Oh, yes, I have seen Almost Family.
I've not seen it. I've seen commercials for it. And the only thing that intrigues me about possibly watching it is that I happen to be a massive Timothy Hutton fan. And that's the only thing that kind of is drawing me in. What did you think?
Don't let that be a thing that draws you in.
Okay.
Let me make this as easy as possible for you. Almost Family is based on an Australian format. It was called Sisters over in Australia. Of course, Sisters is already a classic television show on the East Coast.
So and a classic Brian De Palma movie.
Indeed, probably less likely to confuse people on the second count than the first. But
right.
So they went through several different versions of titles. I believe it had three different titles before it ended up with this one. And it is the story of a young woman whose father is a famous fertility doctor who discovers that her father has been secretly impregnating women against their permission with his own genetic material, as the show says, because apparently there are certain things you can't say on Fox. And so she meets several of her biological sisters, and everyone thinks it's vaguely wacky that her father has been impregnating people under false pretenses using his own genetic material. Oh. And the show has no particular sense of how utterly gross and wrongheaded its premise is. And so it tries to be kind of a somewhat wacky, kind of amusing, big-hearted, look, we're all now sisters thing, and I spent every second of the two episodes I watched going, ew, why do they not know how utterly disgusting and unpleasant this is? And nobody knows. Fox certainly doesn't know. On the day of premiere, they put out a tweet for the show using the hashtag dadgoals.
Oh, man.
Which was an idiotic piece of social media, whatever, that they deleted within 15 minutes because someone must have like seen it and expressed horror that whoever put that up there. So it was deleted.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's gross and unappealing, and the show is not good enough to withstand how bizarrely misguided its tone is, which is all too bad because it's executive produced, not created by, but executive produced by Jason Kadams, who did Parenthood and Friday Night Lights, among other things, and really and truly should have had a better sense of tone, and it's a mess, but life's too short.
I had no idea that the premise was that. I've seen commercials for it, you know, because, you know, I watch The Masked Singer. You're not watching The Masked Singer, right, because of the Emmys?
I am not. I am too annoyed by the promotion behind it.
Right.
So basically, when the emails pop into my inbox on Wednesday night spoiling who was eliminated, I just click right through and go, okay, yeah, I guess that person's a star.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, last night's elimination was I knew who this person was immediately when they got eliminated. But I'm still watching the show, even though I find the judges to be exceptionally annoying, all of them. When Robin Thicke is the best thing on the show, there's a problem. That's you know.
And yet it is the number one show on TV and in several key demographics, so people are pleased. And the person who was eliminated last night is at least a person who I recognize.
Right.
50% of the people who were eliminated in the first show I had never heard of, but that's because I am old and I do not know who Ninja is.
Right. Oh, well. Well, yeah, no, but this person who got eliminated, I don't want to give it away, obviously, because I'm sure there's some people who have it on their DVR and they don't want to...
Sure.
But I don't want to give it away. But yes, the person who got eliminated last night is actually a star. Like, everybody's going to know who this person is. So, okay. Okay, so we got Batwoman on the CW. What's going on with that? We talked about Nancy Drew. Now let's hit Batwoman.
Well, if Nancy Drew is the story of a teenage detective who's scarred by the recent death of her mother, Batwoman is a show about a... aspiring crime fighter who is scarred by the death of her mother. I wrote a column today about the fact that of 15 new broadcast shows this fall, 5, a whopping 33%, use the death of a mother or spouse, or wife rather, as the instigating event for the series, which feels wildly disproportionate to me, but what do I know? Anyway, the main character is Kate Kane, and she is cousin to Bruce Wayne, but Bruce Wayne has gone missing. He went missing about 3 years earlier in Gotham. You know who else went missing about 3 years earlier in Gotham? Batman.
Right.
Interestingly, no one is able to put together these two things, which, you know, seems circumstantial at the very least to me. So she returns, and her father, played by DeGray Scott, who has now reached the CW father stage of his career, this is just where we are, as we all age as well, runs a private security firm, basically because Gotham PD has been proven unable to stop crime, and there is a mad woman who calls herself Alice and runs the Wonderland gang, and she's taking over the city, but wouldn't you know it, Kate Kane is about to discover her cousin's secret lair, and she's about to don the cowl and start kicking butt and taking names, and it's okay. It's not bad. I watch a lot of CW DC Comics shows, and this one is okay. It's not as good as Flash was in its first season. I think the first season of The Flash is a really good show. It's not anywhere near as crazy and fun as Legends of Tomorrow is now, but it's kind of mid-range Arrow as your action vigilante shows go. It's okay. If you like the kind of thing it is, it fills time. Ruby Rose is the star. I'm not actually sure that she's all that good, but she has a very distinctive look, and I think that people are enjoying photographing her. It's not so much that she's beautiful. She's very attractive, but she's distinctive. She's got strong features, and so there's a lot of kind of shooting her coming in and out of light and playing around with light hitting cheekbones and stuff, and that's something. It's okay. Again, not a huge recommendation, but if you like the kind of thing it is, and you like it when all of the DC shows on the CW cross over in November, it's a thing you have to watch to keep up with all of them. But I'm not, like, enthusiastic about it or anything.
Okay. Well, how many DC shows are on the CW now?
Well, depends kind of on the moment, because at this moment, Legends of Tomorrow is off, but it will be back at mid-season. But you have Arrow, which is in its final season. You have The Flash, which continues to chug along. You have Black Lightning, which when it premiered was initially not supposed to be part of the shared universe, but okay, it's going to be part of the crossover this year, so it's that. Then you got Supergirl, and that may be it, but that feels like plenty.
Yeah, no, it sounds like plenty. It sounds like plenty. All right.
Yeah, in any given week, the DC shows on the CW are taking up 5 hours of DVR space, and that's a lot.
Yeah, and they're on there, and it says here that they're all produced by Greg Berlanti, who, by the way, went to college with one of my ex-girlfriends at Northwestern.
He went to college with many of my colleagues, because Northwestern and Medill, of course, are producers of many of our nation's finest journalists in all realms. Yeah. So yes, I have many colleagues who went to college with him, because he's my peer, I guess. So good on him. He has 19 shows, I believe, on TV this moment, and that's not an exaggeration.
No, I know it's not. I know it's insane.
He's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us. We talk TV every couple of weeks, and we'll take a break here, and we'll come back and talk some more. You can read him in The Hollywood Reporter, and you can check him out at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk after the news right here on 720 WGN. We are just the All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're back, and we're here until 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday will begin in a little bit. Just get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about some Halloween stuff, get some scary stuff in there, and talk about movies that sent people running out of the theater. We're also going to talk about some Halloween costumes and some really stupid, expensive versions of cheap products. So that's all coming up. Right now, though, we're talking about TV, as we do every 2 weeks, with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, tell us about Looking for Alaska. This is a Hulu show.
It is indeed. It is the latest John Green adaptation to hit the big or small screen. He is, of course, the YA novelist behind such books to movies as Fault in Our Stars and Paper Towns. This was actually his first book, and it was initially put into development as a movie back in 2005 by Josh Schwartz, who at the time was very, very hot off the OC, and folks kept having difficulties making it into a movie. Josh Schwartz dropped out for a while. It was a group of other various writers who were coming and going, and then it ended up back with Josh Schwartz, who reacquired it just as Peak TV was allowing for everything to become a miniseries. And so now it is a 8-hour miniseries, and like many John Green novels and movies, it is a coming-of-age story about a young man being fascinated by an enigmatic woman who, to some degree, exists only to ultimately change his life. The backdrop here is an Alabama prep school, and it's decent. Primarily, it's decent because Josh Schwartz and John Green are a really, really good combination, and they would have been a good combination back in 2005, and they happen to still be a good combination here. There's something in the way that the John Green characters talk. They're witty, they're sarcastic, but they also have a vein of earnest sincerity that goes very, very well with what Josh Schwartz does very well. And so there's a lot of this that feels really good. Doing the story in 8 hours allows for a lot of the supporting characters to come to life a little. There are some very good performances here, largely supporting performances. Charlie Plummer, who's the lead, is okay. But Christine Frosseth, or Frozeth, who is the female lead, named Alaska. Probably, if that causes you to sort of cringe and go, "Hey, a girl named Alaska," probably the show will be too twee for you anyway. But she's really good. She was a standout in The Society on Netflix as well. I think she's terrific. They're really good supporting performances by Denny Love, who plays the main character's roommate, whose nickname is the Colonel. And then there are good supporting performances. Tim Simons from Veep has a very good role. Ron Cephas Jones, who won an Emmy for This Is Us, has a good supporting role. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's sincere and interesting. It gets some good emotional material that kind of packs a punch here and there. I think it's solid, and I think it is just an example of a smart pairing of showrunner and material. It's not great, but if you like the thing it is, if you like smart, quippy, sometimes a little bit emotional YA teen drama, I think it will play for you.
Okay. And that premieres tomorrow, actually, on Hulu.
It premieres tomorrow in its entirety, so all 8 episodes. This is not one of those weekly Hulu shows, keeping track of which way Hulu is releasing a show.
Yeah.
Always a challenge, but this is all 8 episodes premiering Friday.
Okay. Premieres tomorrow, so look for that. That's Looking for Alaska, and that's on Hulu. Okay. My producer, Tom, really has been angry with Damon Lindelof for a long time. Tom, could you explain what that anger does it come from the finale of Lost and on? Is that where it comes from?
It kind of comes from Lost as a whole, looking back on it. I mean, in terms of TV shows that first broke my heart, it's Lost.
Yeah.
That was a show that I watched every single week with my mom. I was really invested in it. And even when I thought the story was going dumb or weird places that I didn't like, I still watched it to the very end, thinking that they would get it all together. I'd get my answers and I'd finally, you know, come to peace with all this. And then the finale happened, and I was like, that's it. I'm never watching anything that Damon Lindelof or Carlton Cuse, or however you say his name, are involved in again, because they're just morons.
Let me just say this, and I know, Dan, you feel the same way. You need to watch The Leftovers.
I know.
that's all I'm saying. You need to watch The Leftovers. His latest thing, though, is the big premiere that is this Sunday night. Succession is done, so now the big Sunday night show on HBO is going to be Watchmen, which was made into a movie that Zack Snyder directed some years ago, which is a film that I really enjoy. Tell me about what you think of the latest Watchmen.
I'm a little concerned about you really enjoying the movie, but that's a different conversation entirely. When we all know that the real conversation we need to have is about the fact that Tom needs to watch Leftovers.
Yeah, and, no, we've discussed this. We've discussed this plenty of times, Dan.
And I think Tom is not alone. I think that there are two groups of people. There are the group, well, maybe there are, you know, it's possible that in the world there are more than two groups of people.
Right.
I'll allow for that. But there are two groups of people. There are the people who look at Damon Lindelof through the prism of Lost, and maybe they're disappointed. Some of those people probably also feel like Prometheus was a frustrating or disappointing movie. I don't disagree. I think it's a movie that has some really great ideas and falls apart towards the end, which is a little bit like Lost. In contrast, however, Leftovers was a show that had great ideas and only got better as it went along.
Yep.
And thoroughly stuck a landing in all of the ways that Lost fans probably wanted Lost to. So the people who stuck with Damon Lindelof through The Leftovers, they look at him as the Leftovers creator, Damon Lindelof.
Right.
And so, you know, those people are like, yes, new show from that Damon Lindelof. I would say that Watchmen is much more in the Leftovers vein. And I think that as such, it is going to have a passionate fan base who are devoted to the big ideas and the big swings it's taking. But then it will also have a group of fans who
Love the graphic, the comic, graphic novel. It's really a comic. Yeah. Some things are graphic novels. That one's a comic.
Right.
Which is in no way a pejorative. That's just what it was. And I think there, you know, and perhaps it carries over to people who loved the movie also, because the movie is a very literal adaptation of the comic, who are going to feel as if it's not as fun and superhero-y as what they want. Me, I think it is a show that has big things on its mind, that is tackling a lot of interesting formal and philosophical concepts, and it is world-building to a tremendous degree. It is wonderfully made top to bottom. It's well-written. It's well-directed. It has a score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross that is phenomenal. It is an amazing score. It is full of great performances. Regina King is wonderful. Jeremy Irons is great. Who else is great in it? Tim Blake Nelson is wonderful.
Don Johnson, too.
Don Johnson is surprisingly good. Hong Chau, who has been sort of seen stealing up a storm for a couple of years now, is wonderful. And it just, it builds and it builds. Gene Smart is amazing. Did I say Gene Smart?
No, you didn't.
So good.
Yeah.
It is, I would say, as good as Gene Smart has ever been, and Gene Smart is a treasure. The pilot is fantastic. I think that there's a little bit of a drop in the second episode, not like a precipitous drop or anything.
Yeah.
And then I've seen 6 episodes, which is a representative sample. I think episodes 4, 5, and 6 are just top-notch and aspiring to just to real thought and experimentation. It's not like a show like Legion where it's kind of whimsical and surreal to a sometimes impenetrable degree. It's fairly straightforward. I don't know how it plays if you don't know the material. I think you do maybe have to be aware of the material, or else you have to be patient. I think one or the other. So if you don't know the comic, that's fine. You just have to stick with it. But if you do know the comic, I think it's a really, really strong show. I think it's also a really strong show that a lot of people are going to hate. And that's, to me, that's okay, because I've talked to people who hate Leftovers, who tuned out Leftovers early on or just could not get into it. I think that this is a show of substance, and as such, some people are going to think it's awful, and other people are going to think it's brilliant, and I think I'm closer to the latter.
Okay. All right. Boy, that's a good review. So, Tom, it seems to me like you're going to have to forgive Lendinoff and jump on board on this.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. We'll see.
We'll start with the Leftovers, at least.
We can take the weekend and binge 3 seasons of Leftovers, yeah. And then we can talk again about that.
So that's Watchmen. It premieres on Sunday night on HBO. Dan, always a pleasure, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it, Nick.
Okay, buddy, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we'll talk to him again in a couple of weeks and talk all about TV right here in 720 WGN. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back.
Been through you, where did you go? I thought I knew you, what did I know? You don't look different, but you have changed. I'm looking through you, you're not the same.
All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. It's Thursday. Triple Play Thursday begins. I like that we get to hear 2 more Beatles songs. Who chose the Beatles for Triple Play Thursday?
That's coming to us from Dave in Monroe.
All right, Dave in Monroe. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday.
Nice right. Tail on that.
Thanks, man. Welcome back, everybody. So, you know, I haven't touched base with you about some of the horror movies that you've been watching.
Oh, goodness.
Because
yes.
Tom has been, you know, it's the month of October, so that means it's the best month of the year, and that means Halloween is in it at the end of the month. And Tom, you like to watch horror movies. Trying to watch a horror movie a day.
Yeah, and I've been managing to do it, believe it or not.
All right, well, let's catch up on some of the stuff you've been watching.
So I did a whole zombie week. So I hit Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. Of which, obviously, Dawn of the Dead is the crowning achievement, but I've always been a huge fan of Day of the Dead. I think that really knocks my socks off every time I watch it.
Yeah.
It just shows George at the pinnacle of his zombie filmmaking. I think it's really, really spectacular. But obviously you have to say Dawn of the Dead to a certain extent because it took things to a whole new level.
Dawn of the Dead, it in my opinion, is the best zombie movie ever made. And obviously the most important zombie movie ever made is Night, because Night of the Living Dead, you know, that, I mean, zombies had been around in movies before,
but they weren't like that.
George Romero changed the game. He invented an entire subgenre with Night of the Living Dead. And I love Night of the Living Dead. I love Day of the Dead too. I think Day of the Dead is great. A lot of people complain about Day of the Dead, which I don't agree with this, but this is the complaint that I've heard over the years about Day of the Dead, is that it's too talky. That's the thing that people, it's just a lot of people screaming at each other, and it's really talky. I don't feel that way at all, because I think the movie's great. But that's the main complaint that I hear from people, is that there's just too much talking going on.
Yeah, but it's incredibly bold and upfront with its political theme. He just gets more and more political, and outwardly so with each one, in terms of how he's critiquing society. You know, Night of the Living Dead was pretty subtle. Dawn of the Dead more upfront, and then Day of the Dead, he's just laying it all out. He's like, well, this is how I feel about
the movie that I think is criminally underrated, that I think is the second best zombie movie that he's made, is a movie that I think was way ahead of its time, and really, if you watch it now, it was real prescient and really said a lot about what's going on in the world today with the 24-hour news cycle, with social media, especially with social media, is Diary of the Dead. I think Diary of the Dead is one of my favorite George Romero movies of all time. And it doesn't, I don't think it gets the respect that it deserves. I don't think it gets the attention that it deserves. And like I said, I think it's my second favorite Romero zombie movie. It goes Dawn and then Diary. And I know that that's very uncommon opinion, but I think that movie is great. The only weird thing is that he chose to instead of like jumping on Facebook, because when the movie came out, Facebook was not a thing. When the movie came out, MySpace was. So in the film, in Diary, it's all about posting stuff on MySpace, which now of course is
aged horribly,
antiquated, yeah, and gone. But if you replace what the you know what the website is with Facebook or with other social media that exists today, the movie's right on the money, like right on the money about what's happening in the world today. I love Diary of the Dead. I love it, and he made it on a minuscule budget. Mm-hmm. Lots of, you know, and some of the things that you look for in Romero's movies are quality kills and cool zombies, and that's all in there. Plus, there's the great Amish dude. who is just badass, and I love that movie, and I think it needs more love than it gets.
Well, his later career was kind of fraught, because not only was he being celebrated because zombies had made a resurgence because of stuff like, I know it's not technically a zombie movie, but 28 Days Later and Shaun of the Dead, yeah, really made people interested in it again. It got back into the pop culture zeitgeist. People wanted zombie t-shirts.
Walking Dead, yeah, came on.
Walking, yeah, Dead. Yeah. They do zombie 5Ks. You know, it got really crazy, so people went back, started worshiping him again, which he deserved. Yeah. Yeah. But it also meant that maybe the style of movie he was making was seen as old hat. And when it comes to, especially Shaun of the Dead, we're now postmodern.
Right.
We're just constantly referencing old stuff, and it's considered just references, and people are not so interested in going back and even watching, like, say, Lucio Fulci's Zombie or Zombie 2, if for our friends in Italy.
Yeah.
They didn't necessarily want to engage with the filmmaker. They wanted to just reference them to show off how much they quote unquote knew,
yeah,
which kind of, so again, postmodern, everybody just wants to make references as opposed to like make the thing itself. So it's sad because Romero was supremely talented, a man
one of
who
the, one of the greatest.
Yeah, built his career from the literally the ground up. He worked for nothing. He did it only for the art itself. Got to work with Mr. Rogers, which is super cool.
Yep. Some of the equipment used in Night of the Living Dead was from the set of Mr. Rogers, which I just think is such a beautiful connection. Like, there's like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood is connected to Night of the Living Dead. That's awesome to me.
So he was a rare gem and the type of filmmaker that doesn't that only comes around every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I think there are people out there that are like him today that want to do really ground level stuff and make it, you know, for no budget, but you're not going to hear about them as much.
George Romero was a real special talent. Like I think he was one of a kind. I think he was a legend. And when we lost him, we lost a true artist. We lost a satirist on the level of, like, you know, like Will Rogers, you know, like that kind of satirist. And he his stuff was, you know, he created an entire genre. And he kept working, you know, but a couple of years before he passed away was the last movie he made. Survival of the Dead was his last movie, which had some great stuff in it. And an incredible final shot. The final shot of Survival of the Dead is one of my favorite final shots in movie history. But you're right. I mean, you know, like the genre had caught up with him. Finally, we caught up. Like, you know, oh, this guy was way ahead of his time and nobody was really paying attention to what he was doing. And I still think stuff like, you know, like there's movies that he made that don't get the recognition. I think Monkey Shines is a great film.
Monkey Shines is nuts.
And there's nothing, there are not many things on the planet that are more suspenseful than the last 15 minutes of that movie. It is insanely suspenseful and beautifully crafted. My second favorite movie outside of Dawn, which was George's favorite movie, is Martin. I think Martin is an incredible movie. And so he was capable of doing more than just the zombie stuff.
Sure.
But when he made the zombie movies, he always, you know, there was a special like sort of message that he wanted to give. You know, and I loved Land of the Dead. I think Land of the Dead is a terrific movie. So, but he was something. He was special. So you watched
a lot of zombie stuff.
All the zombie stuff. Okay, well, I want to get to more of what you watched, and we're going to listen to some audio of people back in 1979 when Halloween came out. We're going to listen to some actual audio of people freaking out watching Halloween. The movie Halloween. So we got that and more. We're talking horror movies that will scare the crap out of you, and some movies that have made people actually run from the theater and just flee. What are those to you? It's Halloween time. We're talking scary, scary movies. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this.
You are making me crazy. I'm in love, but I'm lazy. So won't you please come home?
Nice choice. That's it. Well, it's not. There are no deep cuts when it comes to the Beatles, but that's a nice little offbeat choice. Great song.
It's always been one of my favorites to listen to.
It's a great song. But that, I mean, it's the Beatles. So I mean,
sure.
What are we talking about here? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Triple Play Thursday. You've got Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. I've been talking to Tom about watching horror movies during Halloween. It's really funny because Tom became producer of this show in March, and you know, I knew that you know, you were a movie fan. But first of all, tell everybody about your podcast that you do.
It's called No Coast Cinema. We talk to various filmmakers here in the city of Chicago and just about movies in general. Have a lot of fun talking about them. That's actually why I'm going to New York to cover that film festival,
to do it for No Coast.
Yeah, they invited me to come along. The folks who organized it are good friends of the show, so they said, yeah, come on, we'll put
By the
you
way,
up in a hotel.
Be careful, man, because did you hear the news? You're flying to Albany.
Yeah, me and Vic had a little bit of banter there. He's looking out for me. He's like, hey, looking at the O'Hare numbers. Not too bad right now.
Yeah.
Apparently just a couple flights canceled, maybe two or three. So hopefully I can get over to Albany and landed safely.
Yeah, I want you to be okay, man, because I freak out about flying in general.
Oh, I personally love flying. I've been flying since I was a kid. So,
right.
I mean, my parents brought me to Singapore when I was an infant originally.
And by the way, the guy who's filling in for you is Captain Flight.
Exactly.
Ben, who's filling in for you.
So maybe I'll just
talk to Ben before you.
How screwed am I, Ben?
Yeah. Ooh. So no coast, and people get. How often do you post?
So we do that about once a week. It's mainly whenever folks are around and working on something. You know, we're not going to try to give you all the news of Hollywood. There are a million people that could do it better than that. We're talking to people from Chicago. There's a bunch of people from the Midwest going to be at the Adirondack Film Festival. So we're going to be talking to them and what they're doing. We're focusing here on the city because this is a great film city. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So that's what's coming up. We're also going to do... in honor of Dolomite Is My Name, we've got a couple of our good friends here in the city are experts on the blaxploitation genre. So they're going to walk us through, because me and Connor, my co-host, are complete neophytes, really.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the basics. You know, I've seen Dolomite. I've seen pretty much a lot of stuff that Rudy Ray Moore has done. I've seen Sweet Sweetbacks, but there's so much more that I have not seen.
Like, have you seen Black Caesar?
I have not seen Black Caesar. I haven't seen Penitentiary.
Yeah. But don't see the sequel.
I've heard that
the sequel is awful. Penitentiary is great.
Yeah.
But the sequel is, you got to see Black Caesar. Black Caesar, to me, best blaxploitation movie ever made.
All right.
Yeah. So
I guarantee you it'll get brought up. We're going to do a
whole thing. It's good. There's a great, it was directed by the great Larry Cohen. The late great Larry Cohen, who directed a good portion. He directed a lot of great blaxploitation movies, a lot of obviously just genre B and exploitation movies over the years. That's what he was known for. But Black Caesar is, it's a pretty incredible movie. It's pretty incredible. My friend Sergio Mims, who is a film critic, he is a blaxploitation, this guy, he knows his blaxploitation movies. And that's what he grew up, you know. He grew up watching them. It's kind of the same thing as me. I don't claim to be a blaxploitation movie expert. I've seen a ton of them, and I had the pleasure of seeing them in the Grindhouse theaters in the Loop with predominantly African American audiences. I got to tell you, awesome.
Yeah, that kind of saddens me is that I just because of when I was born, I don't want to give the whole, I was born in the wrong generation thing, because I'm pretty happy to be born in this generation.
Sure.
But there are certain things that I really wish I could have gotten to experience, such as the number of movie theaters that used to be around playing very specific types of stuff and catering to a specific audience.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool.
Those days when I grew up in the 70s, there was a theater. There were 14 theaters within walking distance in the Loop.
That blows my mind.
You know, now there's just the Chicago Theater, and then you got that AMC Block 37
Block
thing.
Yeah, the dine-in. Yeah,
but all Randolph, State, Lake. There were theaters everywhere, and they were big theaters, one screen theaters. And I mean, obviously, in the early days, they not only showed films, but they had shows there too,
yeah, like live shows and that sort of stuff.
That kind of stuff. Martin and Lewis played the Chicago Theater for like 8 days straight. You know, that kind of stuff. But back in the 70s, they were grindhouses at that point. They were not in great shape.
They
were
showing what they could.
Rodent problems, to say the least, in a lot of the theaters, and they were kind of run down, and they were, you know, they were showing triple features of kung fu movies and stuff like that. They were open till almost all
night,
24 hours, and it was a fun time, man. I know the theaters were in kind of bad shape, but it was a fun time to go down there, in the 70s and watch movies in the Loop. That was a special time.
Yeah, and I really hope a lot of... obviously, the Chicago Theater has transformed itself remarkably. It's my favorite place to go see concerts. But it's kind of too bad that you can't go see a film there.
Yeah.
And even the restoration on the Uptown, which is right down the block from me, as they prepare to start with that, it's not going to be a 3,000 seat movie theater anymore. It's going to be a venue, which is cool. I'm glad that they're at least
doing something.
Well,
it was a venue before it closed.
Yeah.
Prince played there. A bunch of people played there. Riviera used to be a movie theater.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Riviera used to be a movie theater. I saw the Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood. At the Riviera. I saw a bunch of movies at the Uptown too. You know, before they closed down. So that was
imagine that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But anyway, so you've been you're a big horror film fan.
That is true.
And I knew that before you started on the show, but I didn't know that like you and I would come into work wearing the same horror movie T-shirts like at times. And it's happened more than once. It's happened more.
It's
than
a little
once.
Embarrassing, but also very very endearing.
But you're a big horror film fan, so that's this time of year. So what have you been watching? You talked about the zombie stuff that you
zombie
watched.
Stuff. Started getting into the slasher territory. To me, my favorite slasher is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
You see, I don't consider that a slasher movie.
I can understand that though.
Yeah.
I can definitely understand that. But the way that it presents violence is so fascinating because you see very little blood.
There's
in all
people
honesty.
People maintain that is and they're like, oh my god, it's one of the bloodiest movies ever made. It's not.
Yeah, it's
intense as hell.
Very much.
And when it's over, you're drained and you feel like you've been assaulted. But there's very little blood in that movie. So.
Yeah, it's all suggestion, all just quick movements of the camera, quick cuts, excellent editing. And Tobe Hooper was doing something that was so strange, I'm guessing, at the time, which was this extremely realistic approach, this, the quote-unquote cinema verite sort of thing, where it looked like a documentary, and it was presented as a true story, a thing that happened. Well, it's based on Ed Gein.
Loosely based on Ed Gein and other
loosely.
Things. But, you know, I mean... It's set up at the beginning of the movie. It's set up like almost like a true story, almost documentary. You got John Larroquette doing the voiceover at the beginning, which I always find hilarious that's John Larroquette at the beginning doing the voiceover of Texas Chainsaw. And it's set up that way. And just the opening flashes in the shots. And then that, you know, just that weird scarecrow thing, you know, when the movie starts and you pan back to it, you're like, what am I watching? And you feel when you're watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you're on edge the entire movie. Like, you don't quite know what's happening. And it, because of its low budget and because of the way it was shot, it has a very sort of grimy feel to it. And that adds to the effectiveness of it. It's a great film.
And I do love that you can actually... I took the opportunity when I was in Austin not too long ago, last year. You can go out to the gas station.
Yeah, the gas station.
And they sell jerky.
Right, right.
Which is awesome to me.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so slasher stuff. What else?
Slasher stuff.
Did you watch any nightmare movies?
You
Elm
know,
Street?
I like... I did not because I don't own them. They were on a streaming service called Shudder for a period of time. They had all of them except for New Nightmare, which I was disappointed that they didn't have.
It's a great movie.
Because it's awesome.
Yeah.
But I like Nightmare on Elm Street. I think, obviously, Robert Englund is a legend of the genre, but it's never grabbed me as much as things like... I would always rather go to Carpenter and do Halloween or even go back to Psycho, which is...
Right.
Kind of the urtext of what slashers would eventually become and how dangerous it could be and how scary they could be.
You know, when I was growing up and high school, the slasher movies, because, you know, after Halloween came out at the end of 1978, and then it was one of the most copied and influential movies of all time. Nothing but slasher movies. Like, there were three types of movies that were released during my entire years in high school. These were the kind of movies that came out every Friday. You got a slasher movie, you know, Halloween ripoff slasher movie, usually named after some holiday or something. You had a TNA movie, you know, your Porky's, the teenage sex comedies were massive when I was in high school, and Cheech and Chong. Those were the three movies. Cheech and Chong released a movie like every year when I was in high school, and they were all awesome because they're Cheech and Chong. But those were like, that was just and the slasher movie was massive in the late 70s and 80s. Massive.
And that was adolescent entertainment for everybody.
Yeah.
If you were a kid going to the movies or a teen going to the movies, that was those were your options.
Yeah.
Well, now it's basically superhero movie.
Yeah.
Or Conjuring movie.
Yeah, the Conjuring universe.
Yeah. Those have never sat well with me.
Now, me neither.
But I'm not a ghost. I
thought the first Conjuring was good. I thought the first one was good. I particularly liked Lily Taylor in it. I thought she was great. But they don't do much for me. Like, and I didn't, you know, the Paranormal Activity movies, nothing.
I did get scared by the first one. I'll give it that.
I just like, come on, man. So, I don't know. But so you're slasher, movies.
Slasher stuff. Going to move into a little bit of ghost stories. Definitely going to rewatch The Changeling, which is remarkable.
It's a great movie.
Absolutely remarkable. There, many listeners have texted in about The Changeling, and I wholeheartedly agree with them. It's one of the most truly terrifying movies
ever. It's a really scary movie. It's one of the best ghost movies ever made. And just like a red ball bouncing down a staircase, terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I really can't think of another haunted house movie that scares me as much as that.
Up until, and I've said this before on the air, up until Hereditary came out, it was the scariest seance scene I've ever seen is in The Changeling. Yeah. George C. Scott ghost movie. It's really good. But that seance scene in The Changeling is terrifying.
Yeah.
And then Hereditary comes along and kind of is like, oh, yeah, we can do better.
We can do one better. We're going to set Gabriel Byrne on fire.
Yeah. Good Lord. So, listen, we're talking about seeing movies in theaters and the crowd reaction. Listen, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this. We're going to listen to a real audio recording. This was back in early 1979 when Halloween was still the movie Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween, was in theaters. And we all know how great it is, Halloween. And it's my favorite horror movie of all time. John Carpenter's Halloween is my favorite horror movie of all time. And I still think it's incredibly effective and really, really scary. And when it first came out, people were losing their minds. And we're going to listen to audio of people doing just that, like losing their minds watching Halloween. And it's fantastic, too, because when you listen to the audio, because I know the movie, I know every frame of that movie, you know, I know every line, every pause, everything. I've seen Carpenter's Halloween countless times. And I know, so everything that's happening when you listen to the audio, at least I can picture what's happening on screen. I know exactly what's going on screen, so it adds to the fun of listening to it. But you're going to listen to a theater of people from 1979, actual audio theater of people from 1979, freaking out. And that's going to get us to movies that sent people running from the theater. So I want to talk to you guys about that. Open up the phone lines and the text lines. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we want to know, what are the movies that sent you running from the theater that completely freaked you out? All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with more here on 720 WGN.
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning. It is Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah.
And you can jump in here, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here on WGN. Okay. Tom, you ever seen Halloween on the big screen?
I have not. I have not had the distinct pleasure.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But I've seen it many times at home, and I was never quite the same.
Well, it's something on the big screen. I hosted a screening of it at my film club a couple of years back, and it's still, I mean, it still holds up. The movie is really scary. And first time I saw it, crowd was going nuts. I saw it at the State Lake Theater downtown. My dad took me on a Sunday morning, as we did every Sunday morning. My dad would take, we would go downtown to the Loop every Sunday morning, sometimes just take the L because I lived right next door to, you know, there was an L stop right next outside my bedroom window.
Just climbed on up.
Could climb right out, yeah. And we would take the train down and see at least two movies every Sunday and down in the Loop in the old theaters. We saw Halloween the week it came out, the Sunday that it opened, the weekend it came out, and it was unbelievable to be in a theater full of people watching that movie at the time it just came out. Nobody had seen it, and as everybody who's seen it now, everybody's seen Carpenter's Halloween now. It's a perennial, you know, everybody watches it, especially this time of year, everybody watches Halloween. But when it first came out, it was, nobody had ever seen anything like it, and it scared the hell out of everybody. So, from the AV Club, they wrote this little article, and we've got the audio of this. And what you're about to hear in a couple of minutes is actual audio from a screening of Halloween in 1979. The movie opened in late 78. Decades have passed since his debut. Our old pal Michael Myers has become predictable. We've seen him smash through walls, show off his ab muscles with that perfect sit-up trick that he's done so many times now, while still unnerving the blank-faced serial killer's murderous antics, have lost a bit of their edge. But back in 1979, when Carpenter's Halloween was only just a year old, theaters filled with viewers who lost their crap watching Jamie Lee Curtis face off against a character who was just then beginning to cement a place as a movie, horror movie icon. There's a video out there that says this. It was tape recorded inside a Hollywood Boulevard movie theater in 1979. So you can, in the video, the audio that you hear, you can hear Halloween scares work as intended. So yeah, let's just listen to the video, and then we can talk about what's actually happening on screen afterwards. But this is actual audio from 1979 of an audience on Hollywood Boulevard movie theater, in a Hollywood Boulevard movie theater, reacting to John Carpenter's Halloween. Yeah, that's people freaking out, screaming out loud. That's during the last, 10 minutes of the movie, the last 15 minutes, when Jamie Lee Curtis goes across the street to the house where all the dead bodies are, and Michael comes out and appears from the back. It's still very effective, man. But back in when that movie opened, people were freaking out. There are, now, people are sort of desensitized to a lot of stuff, and the slasher genre, as Tom was talking about, he's been watching a lot of horror movies at this time, and the slasher genre has become, it's commonplace now, and the murders have become the thing. It's like, how can we more creatively kill someone on screen? How crazy can the effects be? How bloody can it be? And like we were talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where there's very little blood or gore in that movie, but it's so intensely made. There's no blood in Halloween. There's very little blood in Halloween. But people were freaking out. And, again, after seeing the movie, people were like, oh, that was really bloody. It's not. There's barely any blood in Halloween. But it's so beautifully made that it freaks you out. And that was actual audio of people in 1979 just going nuts. And the audience I saw it with were very vocal, lots of screaming, lots of yelling at the screen. As I said, a lot of the movies that I saw in the 70s, I saw down in the Loop grindhouse theaters with predominantly African-American audience. And Halloween, it's like, pick up the knife, people screaming at the at the screen. So, yeah.
I think the only experience I've had close to this was when I went to go see Get Out.
Yeah.
That was when I was still working at the movie theater, and me and my girlfriend went to go see Get Out, and people were cheering and having a good time. I was like, wow, isn't this nice that people aren't just sitting here like,
Well, that was the thing that's exactly what Jordan Peele wanted.
Which I'm so glad.
When he made Get Out, because he, grew up in seeing theaters, seeing those kind of movies, genre movies, in theaters that were predominantly occupied by African-Americans. And there was a lot of screaming, a lot of people talking back to the screen. Same thing happened when I saw Get Out. I saw Get Out twice in the theater. And both times, people were very vocal and really getting involved. And that was one of the reasons why Get Out became such a phenomenon. It was like, oh, this is what it used to be like to go to the theater and watch a bunch of people together, and experience something all together.
And have fun.
Yeah. So. And, yeah, and then Us came out, too, which is also had a very similar effect.
I actually saw a lot of people just stunned into silence. They were just like,
Us?
Yeah, with Us. They were just so terrified.
It's a great movie. All right, we got a break here, and we want to hear from you guys. What movies sent you screaming from the theater? We got an article about that and more. It's Halloween time, 312-981-7200.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Imagine love, that's a man insane. You broke my wings, but what a thrill. Couldn't miss your records, just quitting balls of fire. I let your love.
All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. I'm here every weekday morning from 1 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from our good pal, Big Ed.
All right, Big Ed. There you go. You ever see the movie Great Balls of Fire with Dennis Quaid?
I have not.
Yeah. You don't need to put it on your must-see list.
But if it's on, is it worth a...
Yeah. Well, Dennis Quaid's really good in it.
Yeah.
It's just not a very... It's not a great movie. But, yeah. So, well, welcome back. It's Halloween time. It's our favorite time of year. And I got an article here from Mental Floss Magazine that lists movies that sent people running out of theaters. And that's what we're talking about, like the extreme stuff, the extreme stuff that just really freaked you out, that was like, I got to get out of here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We got some text here and we want to hear from you. 724 area code said, you should check out some more obscure slasher movies like The Burning, The Prowler, and He Knows You're Alone. I've seen them all.
Yeah, I got to check those out. We've talked about The Burning before.
Yeah, Tom Savini. Some of his best makeup effects are in the Burning. I believe he also did The Prowler. I think he also did the makeup effects in The Prowler. A little fun fact about He Knows You're Alone. Tom Hanks' first movie.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep, a little slasher movie from 1980. There's little Tom Hanks. I think it was probably right before he got Bosom Buddies. So, but yeah, He Knows You're Alone. It's Tom Hanks' first movie. 224 area code said, my first horror movie in a theater was I Spit on Your Grave. I believe it was at the Luna. I think I was 16 years old. Yeah, I saw I Spit on Your Grave at the Luna. It played at the Luna for a very long time. And it played to big audiences at the Luna. And one of the reasons why is because Siskel and Ebert went off on I Spit on Your Grave. They both gave it like zero stars and hated it and said it was offensive and awful and misogynistic and terrible. They not only wrote terrible reviews, but they also reviewed it on their show, on the TV show. And they did it. They talked about it twice, really going off on saying it's probably the worst movie and most offensive movie that they'd ever seen. And their coverage of it and their hatred of it and vocalizing it on their TV show and writing about it backfired because it helped the box office. I remember back in the old days when we used to look in newspapers to find out the showtimes of movies. I remember, you know, during in the movie ad section in the newspaper that the Luna's ad in the entry on the page, they quoted Siskel and Ebert by saying worst movie ever made. And then that people went to go see it at the Luna. Yeah, I Spit on Your Grave. That's where I saw it. The Luna was a magnificent. Have I ever talked to you about the Luna?
Is that the one with where it was just a curtain?
Yeah,
instead
curtains,
of a door?
No doors. It was at it was on Belmont, right east, just east of Cicero.
Oh, okay, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's where it was, right by the old XRT studios, like right down the street. So it was there, and I saw a lot of movies at the Luna. And as I've said before, the Luna was a ridiculous theater because they did not have doors to the auditorium. They just had curtains. And so you could hear, like if you were sitting in the back couple of rows, you could kind of basically hear everything that was happening in the lobby, which at some point included pinball machines and video games as the late 70s, early 80s took over. So you could hear video games and like pinball machines while you're watching the movie. There were no doors at the Luna. It was ridiculous. Saw a lot of movies there, though. 708 area code said, my brother worked at a movie theater when Night of the Living Dead came out. Reportedly, there were two heart attacks in the first week of the movie and his theater. Two heart attacks at the same theater.
You know what? That doesn't shock me. That movie still scares me. Like when the brother does the "They're coming to get you, Bob."
That's hilarious. Yeah,
I love it. It's so scary, though.
Yeah,
it really is freaky.
That's also one of my favorite moments in Shaun of the Dead when he's talking to his mom. Yeah. On the phone. "We're coming to get you, Barbara." So many Easter eggs in Shaun of the Dead. The name of the Italian restaurant that he wants to make reservations.
Fulci's.
I mean, come on. There's a million of them. 815 area code says, "I remember audiences were getting sick watching The Exorcist. I didn't see it until college on TV, so that didn't have that kind of effect on me."
Yeah.
Listen. You know, I was around in 1973 when that movie came out. If you weren't around and didn't experience it, it's not an exaggeration. The entire nation was freaking out over The Exorcist. It's not an exaggeration. They had nurses on duty at theaters because people were passing out. They were throwing up. They were running out. They were freaking out. And this was a nationwide thing. There were lines around the block to see it. And it made news stories. It was like on the news like every night. Oh, here's what happened at an Exorcist screening in here or here. You know, church attendance went through the roof after the movie came out, which is it's completely true. People were like, "I got to get back to church. I don't know what the hell. I got to go back to church."
I mean, by 1973, the practice of exorcism was basically dead. It was and limited to just kind of Jesuits and a few obscure ones at that. And all of a sudden, they're getting calls.
And they're also like, you know, it's based on a true story of a kid. You know, it was a boy in the movie. They made it a girl. But the stuff in the movie, you know, the stuff in the movie didn't happen in real life. Like, nobody's head turned around. And, you know, the scene to me that just, I mean, The Exorcist is a great movie. It's a great movie. And I've seen it 9 million times. The scene to me is that I just can't believe it exists. And I can't believe that it was put in a movie in 1973 that main audiences would see. The crucifix scene.
I think that pushed people over the edge.
And then, like, smacking her, you know, grabbing her mom by the hair.
Yeah.
And then slapping her across the room. And then the bureau moves across. And then her head turns around. "You see what she did?" Mm-hmm. And I've seen it. I've seen that movie 9,000 times. And a lot of it still gets me. But that scene in particular, every time I watch it, I'm like, I got nothing, man.
The two most recent movies that I think have elicited close to that reaction were Hereditary.
Oh.
I knew a lot of people ran when I was working the theater that Hereditary was in, and a lot of people were running out. Oh. People were just walking out with just like, "I can't handle this." And then me and a few other people got sick during Raw. We went to the music box, and I threw up in the bathroom of the music box watching Raw when she's pulling the hair out of her mouth.
Yeah,
it was freaky.
I love that movie.
It's spectacular, but I was sick to my stomach.
Well, no, I can totally understand. There's a lot of stuff in that movie that's like, ugh. Hereditary genuinely scared the crap out of me. I mean, it just really scared the hell out of me. All right?
It's texter 312 sent us a version of, I think it's Nancy, right? The comic where it's the girl that's always like angry looking, but it's redone as a scene from Hereditary.
As a scene from Hereditary.
Yeah, you'll have to see it on there. Right. But it's spectacular.
Okay. We were talking about movies. Mental Floss did a bit about movies that sent people running out of theaters. And it's Halloween. It's that time. It's that time to watch movies that are going to send you running. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Beth on WGN. Hi, Beth. Beth?
Hello?
Yeah, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Nick, I'm counting on you tonight.
Okay.
Because I'm younger, more sensitive viewers. So I have only glimpses of memories of movies or whatever the children told me, and I made them stop.
Okay.
I remember when I was a young woman, I lived close to the last house on the left, and I saw a movie. The movie opened with, I think, a guy in a leather chair, almost like the Maxell guy. It just showed his gloves, his arms. Obviously, Lady of the Night came to say goodbye or say hello, and it was just a horrible scene. And It was stabbing. And I don't know if I watched the whole movie and blacked it out after that. But do you know this movie?
No, I don't. I do not. I mean, we can leave it out there. Maybe because of the description, someone will know. But
well, let me tell you why I called you. Because the reason that I saw all these weird movies is back in the day, and I love how you talk about the old theaters and the old neighborhood.
Yeah.
But remember, you could open the movie section, and it was full of places where you could get a movie for $1.99.
Right.
A movie for $1.75.
Right.
So we would all just pool our money, get some gas money, and we'd all go to the theater, and whatever was playing was playing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We used to do that too. That was a common thing. Going, you know, you had the cheap movie theaters, and you look in the paper. That's when people. I mean, you know, nobody. There's no movie ads in the newspapers anymore. Everybody uses the computer to find out what time a movie starts. People don't even call theaters anymore. It's all like check your phone, see what time it starts. That's what I do. So, but yeah, Beth, I remember. I don't remember the name of that movie though. You described it. I don't really remember it. If anybody wants to help out, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Beth, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Here's Chuck on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, how are you?
All right, what's up?
Funny story. How are you? The Exorcist, when it came out, it was during the time of Nixon was president, and there was an energy crisis going on. And they, at that time, for the first time, I don't think I ever did it again, they moved daylight savings time 2 hours, whatever the case was. It was pitch black at 7:30 in the morning. And after I saw the movie, I was petrified. And I didn't want to get out of bed to turn off the alarm. And I remember my mom yelling from the stairs, "Turn off that damn alarm!"
Yeah.
But I was too afraid to get out of bed to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can. How old were you?
32. No, I'm kidding. I was high school, so I was probably 15 or 16.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll do it to you. It'll do it.
It did it.
Yeah. All right.
It did it.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Bye. Yeah, I was 8 when I saw The Exorcist.
That's wrong. I should have a talk with your father.
My dad took me to see it when I was 8. You know, and I often tell people, you know, it's weird because when I see little kids in movies that are inappropriate for them, I'm like, hey, why would you bring a kid to see this? Then I'm thinking to myself, well, my dad took me to, I mean, I saw everything, but by the time I saw The Exorcist, I had already seen 900 R-rated movies.
Your mind was warped.
Yeah, I mean, I was already, you know, I mean, The Exorcist scared the crap out of me, though.
Sure.
I'm not going to say an 8-year-old kid seeing The Exorcist is pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But when I, you know, it's always, you know, like I always feel hypocritical saying, you know, you shouldn't take a kid to see, you know, this kind of movie. But I always go back to this. I'm like, here's the thing. You think about it. If you want to take a little kid to see, you know, like Midsummer. If you want to take a little kid to see Midsummer, which of course is insane. Just if you want that kid to turn out like me, go ahead. And then most people go, "Oh, okay, I'm not taking him."
All right, fair.
Yeah. So you want the kid to turn out like me? Take him.
I was very much known as a stickler for that rule at the movie theater.
About little kids?
Yeah, about kids. We had a rule that was no children under the age of 6 in PG-13 or R-rated movies after 6 p.m.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, because you want if grown-ups want to go see a movie,
yeah,
they should be able to go see a movie, a grown-up adult movie, without a kid screaming, you know?
True. All right, let's break here. It is Halloween time, and the Mental Floss put together an article about movies that sent people running out of theaters. And that's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. That's right, man. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio at WGN here, and we're here till 5 a.m. And, I'm your overnight dude here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 o'clock. Steve Cochran at 6. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 1 hour, three songs, 312-981-7200. It's Halloween time, so we'd like to talk about scary stuff. And Mental Floss wrote an article about movies that sent people running out of theaters. Now, these aren't necessarily all horror movies. They're not. They're just movies that had moments or scenes in them where people went, all right, I got to go. That's it. I'm out. You just go like, nope, done. Sorry. Thank you.
Me during the last 20 minutes of Jurassic Park, or Jurassic World, rather, the Fallen Kingdom one.
Oh.
I was just like, nope, done.
Oh, well, that's a different reason.
That's a different
you
kind of
you just didn't like the movie. Yeah. That's my favorite of all the Jurassic Park movies. The last one. Yeah. So we're talking about movies where you just go, oh, no, yeah, gone. 815 area code says, my mom is terrified of spiders. So at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost, oh man. So at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Harrison Ford has tarantulas on his back, my mom ran from the theater so fast her feet didn't touch the ground.
Oh,
oh man.
Oh no.
I feel bad for her, but that's funny.
Oh, some people.
If you got some issues with spiders, that I can totally understand, because I remember he's brushing them off with the whip.
Yeah.
Because Alfred Molina's like, Senor.
Also avoid most of the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Huge spider in that one.
Yeah. Well, there's also a classic William Shatner exploitation movie from the 70s called Kingdom of the Spiders. Sven shows it every once in a while. And you know, it's like most of, you know, when you see a movie about, like, arachnophobia is another one that you probably shouldn't watch because you suffer from arachnophobia. But someone who suffers from arachnophobia is not going to watch a movie called Arachnophobia.
No.
I don't think. Although, I have a phobia about, I can't be, like, in small spaces, and I can't lay on my back.
Oh, yeah. Is that would be a claustrophobia?
It's claustrophobia. There's no question about it. But especially, like, laying on my back, if, like, somebody pins me down on my back, I freak. I totally freak. And I can't, like, lay, like, I could never work on a car.
Yeah,
I couldn't be under, no way. On my back, no way. I would lose my mind. But I have repeatedly watched Serpent and the Rainbow, which is a movie that made me hyperventilate, because there's a scene in the movie where they bury Bill Pullman, and the voodoo dust that's on him wears off, and he just, it's a black screen, all you hear is, and he's inside the coffin with a tarantula, by the way, speaking of spiders, on him. And I've seen that movie repeatedly. I remember Roy Leonard was sitting next to me at the screening, in the screening room, during the first time I saw Serpent in the Rainbow, and during that scene, I started to freak out. He's like, are you okay? And I'm like, you know, you're wearing a Kill Bill.
You're
wearing a Kill Bill shirt. Oh,
Volume
my
two.
God.
She has to 1-inch punch her way out of a coffin.
Oh, my God. You ever seen Buried with Ryan Reynolds?
Yep.
That's the whole movie.
Yeah, I can't imagine. That one made me anxious. I'm not so afraid of tight spaces, but yeah. I can see why that would set people off.
So I have that phobia, like a claustrophobic phobia like that, and yet I have a home invasion phobia. So any movies about home invasion, really, like Them, is a movie that I can't. I mean, I've seen it several times. It scares the hell out of me. The first time I saw it, my wife had to comfort me. Like, I was in the fetal position during it.
So I'm guessing Home Alone really sends the jitters up
your
spine.
That movie sucks. You're Next. You're Next is one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It's a great one.
Mike.
It's what's his name?
The guy who's doing Dr. Sleep, right?
Yeah. So. 708 area code says, scariest movie I have ever seen in the theater was a 3D movie called Parasite. Wait a minute, Parasite was terrible. I saw it in my early teens at the Norwich. That's where I saw it too. A fun little fact about Parasite? Not the new one that comes out this week, which is supposed to be one of the best movies of the year. This is a terrible 3D movie. Charles Band made it, or at least produced it. Fun little fact. Demi Moore's first movie, Parasite.
In 3D?
Yeah. Everybody talks about Leprechaun, you know, being Jennifer Aniston's first movie. Is it the first Leprechaun? Is she in the first Leprechaun?
I believe so.
She's not in Leprechaun in the Hood? With Snoop Dogg? With Leprechaun Man and Snoop Dogg? That's Warwick Davis,
yeah,
right?
Warwick Davis.
Yeah.
Good Lord. One of the strangest franchises in probably film history.
You know, they cost a buck to make.
Warwick Davis will work for.
They probably paid Snoop Dogg in pot. You know, they didn't have to. Like, here's a lid. So, all right, let's take a break here. The news is coming up after this, and I still haven't even gotten to the article here for Mental Flaws about movies that sent people running out of the theater. And what movies made you run out of the theater, or at least turn off the TV if you were watching it? Movies that kind of traumatized you. And by the way, we're also going to talk about the hottest Halloween costumes for this year and some of the best Halloween costumes ever. That's coming up here on 720 WGN. Okay, news after this.
Got a woman mean as she can be. Oh, I got a woman mean as she can be. Sometimes I'm gonna think she's almost mean as me. Well, I ain't bragging, but you know it's understood. Like I do, baby, I sure do it good. I got a woman mean as she can be.
Right.
Sometimes I think she's almost mean.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, Triple Play Thursday.
312-981-7200. Here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Halloween time, so we're talking about movies that just... That's it. I got to go. I got to get out of here. So... Mental Floss put together an article here about movies that sent people running out of the theaters. Now, these aren't necessarily all horror movies. Over the years, the story of people freaking out and fleeing from the movie theaters is not as likely. However, many movie filmmakers have been successful at driving moviegoers out of their seats. One of the latest additions... was Robert Zemeckis, whose film The Walk was quickly becoming notorious for its dizzying depiction of wire walker Philippe Petit's journey between the Twin Towers in 1974. The perspective of Petit more than 1,300 feet in the air was reportedly too much for some to take. Yeah, I also have a fear of heights. Wow, I'm a real head case. Talking about all of my issues here on the air. Yeah, I'm not real good with heights at all. In fact, I can't stand them. And The Walk was ridiculous. I mean, I love the movie. It was one of my favorite movies of that year. But I saw it in IMAX 3D, which of course was not a good idea for someone who is terrified of heights. So, hey Tom, did you see The Walk, the Zemeckis movie?
I did not. Was that the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah.
No, I did not see it.
It's a great movie. It is a great movie. It's a film. It's an allegory about filmmaking. That's ultimately what it's about. But also, you know, to watch it now, like if you watch it on at home, it does not have the same effect. That's a movie that's meant to be seen on the big screen. And I saw it IMAX 3D, and I seriously, there were points in that movie when I was like, oh my God, I was like clutching the sides of my seat, like I can't. And you know what else did that? I saw it in IMAX. Which one of the? I don't know, because the Mission Impossible movies all just kind of blend together for me.
You're talking about Ghost Protocol when he's up on the
in Dubai.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's Ghost Protocol.
God, I saw that in IMAX at the Navy Pier, and I saw it by myself, and the people around me were concerned. They were just concerned about me. They're like, man. Why are you watching this? Because you are clearly completely freaking out. And then just because, you know, Tom Cruise is nuts anyway, and will do anything. That's one of the reasons why Tom Cruise is so beloved in the world of the action movies, because he does his own stuff. Like, he'll do anything. Like, yeah, that's him on top of that building. That's really him. That's not a stuntman. Yeah. That's him hanging on the side of a plane. I wonder, how much do you think it costs to insure Tom Cruise on a movie? I mean,
I'm going to say it's upwards of $5
million. It's got to be like ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Because he insists on doing his own stunts. And then he does that jump in the last one. What the hell was the last one called?
Oh, that was Fallout.
Fallout was so good.
Yeah, shattered his ankle.
Shattered his ankle and then continued running. Out of the frame, busted ankle, ran off the frame, And then he healed up faster than they said it was going to take, like, you know, 6 months. Took him like 8 weeks or something, or four, less than that. Like, it was like 3.5 weeks, and they were back on set.
He was, he's just inhuman, man.
No, I don't even know. And the guy is, what is he, 56, 57 years old? He looks like he's 20. He's a madman. But you know what? The result, Fallout was amazing. That was really, McCrory has turned into a phenomenal action director. You know? I got to go back and watch Way of the Gun. People keep telling me that I need to go back and watch that. That was his directorial debut, because the big splash he made, because he wrote Usual Suspects. That was the big splash that he made. But like Way of the Gun, which didn't make any money at all, and I didn't like it when I saw it. But people are like, no, you need to go back and watch. You've seen Way of the Gun, right?
Yeah, that's Del Toro and Ryan Phillippe, right?
Ryan Phillippe and a very pregnant Juliette Lewis.
True that.
Yeah. And people, you know, like I have a friend who's like, who maintains that's actually one of the best movies he's ever seen.
It's definitely intense.
Yeah, I just remember not liking it, and I haven't gone back to watch it again. I should, because I've loved his movies. You know, like all the Mission Impossible movies that he made are great. And they freak you out. They'll make you want to leave the theater. And that's what we're talking about, movies that make you want to get out and leave. Here's Big Ed on WGN. Hi, Ed.
Good morning, Ed. I got two things here. First, I was at the theater, you know, as a little kid, and saw a trailer for the movie, I don't know, one of them mummy movies.
Uh-huh.
And the scene was a guy was in like a padded cell, you know, one of them deals, and the mummy comes up and bars on the window, and the mummy just sticks his hand through the bars and just blang, blang, you know, knocks them all out. It scared me so much that you know, when the movie showed the next week, I wouldn't go to it.
Uh-huh.
All my friends, you know, they were like, man, yeah, I made up all these dumb excuses. I
right.
No, I don't want to go see that. The other one is The Exorcist. I saw it in this, it's called the Warner Theater. It was one of them big surround,
yeah,
you know, screens.
Yeah.
And while I was sitting there, this lady, she gets up and she's like leaving, and I said, "Well, what's the matter? Can't you take it?" And she looked at me and goes, "Do you want me to throw up on you?"
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know, some people got to get out of there, Ed. I know there's so many stories. I was saying earlier, when The Exorcist came out, the stories of people passing out and throwing up and getting up and leaving and freaking out, and nurses were on. It was a phenomenon, man. I mean, it was insane. Ed, thank you for the call. We got some texts here. A bunch of texts are coming in. People freaking out over movies. It's a common thing. 815 area code says, my husband went to a Catholic school. He never saw The Exorcist because the nuns told him that they would go to hell if they saw it. Oh, my God. Wow. There's a scare tactic right there. You will go to hell if you see The Exorcist. Oh, man. 414 area code says, I would never let elementary school kids watch certain movies. My son was in the first grade. My brother was babysitting. He watched Nightmare on Elm Street at home. My son wrote a book report on the movie. Needless to say, I got called into school. Did a book report on Nightmare on Elm Street. Uh, 608 area code says, as many times as I've tried, I can only make it about halfway through Full Metal Jacket. Really?
Well, once you get the scene with
the D'Onofrio?
Yeah, D'Onofrio.
In the bathroom with the rifle?
Yeah, there have been times where I've paused it and finished it the next day.
Really?
I get depressed.
The thing is that movie is split into two. It's two halves, because the whole basic training stuff is a completely different movie than the second part. I mean, it all comes to, I love that movie. I think that movie's great. You want to know who played the best Joker? Matthew Modine. You want to talk about a real Joker? You want the best Joker of all time? Matthew Modine.
That's funny. I'm going to call you Private Joker.
Yeah. That Arlie Ermey. He was not supposed to be in that movie. He was just a tech advisor. He was just on set as a tech advisor. And then Kubrick, like, saw him do stuff and went, yeah, you're in the movie. And he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. You know what my favorite line that Arlie Ermey ever said? This isn't even my desk, when he picks up the phone in Seven. The phone rings. picks up the phone, goes, this isn't even my desk, and hangs on the phone. One of the few funny moments in Seven. Have I ever told you about one of my favorite moments in Seven? The subtle, a subtle thing that Morgan Freeman does? Have I ever told you?
No.
First of all, Morgan Freeman is so good in Seven, it's ridiculous. Like, his performance, both he and Brad Pitt are amazing in it. Morgan Freeman is heartbreaking in that movie. Like, I love him in that movie so much. But there's a scene, the scene where he is invited over to Brad Pitt and Gwyneth Paltrow's place, and they have dinner. And then after dinner, they bust out all the pictures, you know, the body, dead bodies, and they're trying to figure out this. And he's like, Brad Pitt is like, I'm going to get a beer. You want one? He's like, wine, please. And so Brad Pitt pours a glass of wine into a water glass. And, like, it's like a half a bottle of wine. He pours it into a water glass, not a wine glass, not, you know. It's like a giant water glass full of wine, and he gives it to Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman puts it down and doesn't look at it. And they're talking about the case. And there's a moment in the movie. And next time you watch it, Tom, you have to watch. It's just a moment that it's one of my favorite moments of, like, an actor making a choice and delivering, like, this moment silently, and it's not acknowledged at all by any. You know, there's only two people in the scene. Brad Pitt doesn't acknowledge it. Nobody. So they're talking about the case. They're looking at, you know, some facts, and he picks up the glass, and he's about to take a sip of it. And he looks at it, and he does this take with the wine glass, where he looks at the wine glass like, "What?" he doesn't say anything. He just looks at it, why do I have 15 ounces of wine in a water glass? Doesn't say a word, but just this take that he does, where he looks at the wine glass, is one of my favorite moments. It's one of my favorite moments ever. Makes me laugh every single time I watch that movie. 847 area code. Scariest movie I've ever seen is Nacho Libre. The acting in it will haunt me forever. Hey, man, I like that movie. I'm one of the few people on the planet that likes Nacho Libre.
Chancho, let me borrow your sweats.
Get that corn out of my face. That's my favorite. Yeah, people hate that movie. Oh, man, I remember when it came out. And I'm not a guy, we've talked about this before, I can't stand Napoleon Dynamite. I hate that movie. But for some reason, I really love Nacho Libre. I don't know why.
Hey, man.
I mean, I love, you know what? I love luchador wrestling. Maybe that might have something to do with it. Not sure. But I think that movie's, get that corn out of my face. Welcome back, everybody. Of course, that's the theme from Hulk. So we gonna have a John Carpenter triple play?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. John Carpenter obviously composed the music for Halloween, and we are nearing Halloween. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Ike.
Ike. All right. Welcome back. Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell at 5. The news is up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay. Movies that send you screaming and running from the theater. Some of these aren't necessarily horror movies, but we've got some people who are calling in. 404 area code says, scariest movie, staying overnight at my aunt and uncle's house when I was 9 and they were watching Phantasm 2. What? All right. Yeah, why were they watching Phantasm 2? Not that Phantasm 2 is bad, because it's not. Why weren't they watching the original?
Maybe they didn't have it.
Yeah, if you got Phantasm 2, you got to have Phantasm. So, Scott from Streamwood says, "What about Jaws when the man's head pops out from the boat?" You know, that was added after it had been. We were talking about movies that were test screened. That was added after the test screening. People weren't like freaking out, so Spielberg put in a jump cut. He was like, "I'm just going to put in this scene where the head pops out." And it scares the crap out of everybody. I remember in the theater, people were screaming. That's another one of those movies that actually benefited from all of the technical problems that they were having. Like, they had a terrible time with the shark. Like, it just wasn't working. Bruce, obviously, as they called the shark. And it was this motorized shark, mechanical, that just wasn't working. And so as a result, Spielberg couldn't show the shark as much as he had originally intended. But, and that worked out great, because it made it all the more frightening. But he wanted to show the shark a lot more, but couldn't do it because of budget constrictions and problems with the mechanical shark. But it turned out great. Trevor from Antioch says, I could never watch TV shows where one of the characters got appendicitis. I was always paranoid of getting it. I still am. I wish I would just burst so I could take it, so they could take it out. Don't think that. Don't wish that, Trevor. Joliet Mike says, I was only 12 when my dad took me to see Natural Born Killers. Oh, my God. Natural Born Killers at the Golf Mill Theater. After the first 10 minutes, he grabbed me by the arm and we left because he didn't realize how violent it was. Yeah, I can understand that. Doc says, Nick, how do you respond to the claustrophobic scenes in Body Double? Well, there are a couple of moments in that movie that kind of freak me out, but Craig Wasson has those anxiety phobias throughout the movie, which, of course, you know, because that movie is basically, Rear Window slash Rear Window and Vertigo, like, combined, because it's De Palma, and De Palma likes to ape a ton of Hitchcock stuff. He'd be the first guy to admit that. But yeah, that's a pretty accurate description of how freaked out you can get from claustrophobia. 301 area code says, I went to see the original Last House on the Left several years ago. I wanted to leave when the girls started getting assaulted, but the friends I was with wanted to stay. I felt like taking a million showers afterwards. Yeah, that's a... That Last House on the Left is it's a brutal movie. It's really, really, it's really, really brutal. I always hesitate to whom I recommend Last House on the Left to, because it is unrelenting in how brutal it is. So, let's see. Here is Sue on WGN. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Well, so this was several years ago, but I was house sitting for this family in this beautiful old home. And anyway, the family said, it's going to be really windy this weekend and the fence might blow over. So if that happens, don't worry about it. Anyway, I think I was watching that movie, Mama. So I got myself all freaked out. And then I heard big noise and I was like, oh, the fence blew over. So anyway, I go upstairs to go to bed and there's a long hallway to the bedroom and the bedroom door was shut. I knew I left it open. And all I got a picture in my head was about, like, Poltergeist there when she's looking at the TV.
Yeah.
And it was scarier at the time. Anyway, I was, like, sweating a little bit. It took kind of a lot of nerve for me to go up there and just open the bedroom door. And, the wind blew. The door shut from the window blew open.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Yeah,
anyway.
But you were watching Mama, the one with Jessica Chastain?
Yeah, I know.
That's actually a pretty scary movie.
That is, exactly. Yeah. It's this beautiful old home, and I got myself freaked out.
Yeah, well, that'll happen. You know what can happen inside your head is scarier than whatever happens in the real world sometimes.
That's true.
All right. Thank you, Sue.
Okay.
Right, bye.
Okay, bye.
Did you see Mama with Jessica Chastain?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was really good. The guy who directed it?
Yeah, Anthony Muschietti.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty cool movie. I like Jessica Chastain in anything. I wish she would dress more goth like that. I thought she looked fantastic in that movie.
We'll get her into a Cure biopic.
Like the dark hair and the makeup, and she had the tats and stuff. It's like, wow, Jessica Chastain. She's a rocker in that movie, too. That's a pretty scary movie, though.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah. Well, lots of texts. Jay says, thanks, great show. Thank you. Hi, Nick. I now recall in 1990 or 1980, The Shining made me run out of the theater during the movie. Am I the only person who doesn't think The Shining is that scary? I mean, I love the movie. I just don't think it's all that scary.
I'm sure you're not alone, but it certainly wormed its way into my head.
Yeah.
As something very just unnerving.
I remember I saw it at the Mercury Theater, which was located at North Avenue and Harlem. Saw a lot of movies at that theater. That's where I saw The Shining. I remember. I can remember where I saw a lot of the movies when I was younger. 708 area code. I saw the movie Jaws at the Milford Theater when it first came out. I'm 1 year younger than you, and it scared the bleep out of me. Yeah, I can understand that. I was 10 when that movie came out, Jaws. And it freaked me out. But I became fascinated with sharks. I bought like every book about sharks ever after that movie came out. I just became obsessed. And there were shark books. Everybody was released. Anything that had to do with a shark was released after Jaws because it became such a phenomenon. 312 says, I walked out on Wayne's World 2. My date wanted to stay because I paid for it. I don't get that logic. I don't blame you for walking out. I'm wanting to walk out on Wayne's World 2.
But it's got Dell, the greatest roadie of all time.
Who plays Dell?
Oh my God, he's in a ton of stuff. He's in Alien 3. He's
Which bald British guy was he in Alien 3?
So it's Dell Preston, played by Ralph Brown.
I don't remember. I don't remember anything about Wayne's World 2.
He's got some of the best lines too.
I don't remember anything about Wayne's World or Wayne's World 2. 419, The Deer Hunter, when they were playing Russian Roulette, that traumatized my mother. All right, we got a break here. But yeah, that my mom was traumatized by the Deer Hunter. Like it was, I remember my mom just lost it in the theater. And justifiably so. It's a great film too. Okay, we're breaking. The news is coming up after this. Technically, this is Ennio Morricone. That's the credit. That's the credit that reads on the thing. Ennio Morricone did the score for the thing. But Carpenter did that part.
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5, we've got the opening bell, and then at 6, it's Steve Cochran for your morning drive. So we've been talking about movies that just make people leave. Like, I can't. I can't. I got to go. 815 says, Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt, very scary movie. Really?
I mean, it is intense.
It's a terrific movie.
Yeah.
Wildly underrated and underseen. I mean, it's a science fiction version of Groundhog Day, essentially. You know, I love that movie. I think that movie's terrific. 847 area code says, I ran out of Ferris Bueller's Day Off so bad it scared me. I understand. I can totally understand your hatred of that movie. All right, we got some people on the line. Here's John on Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, what's up?
Hey, I'm glad your show is on because the only thing entertaining on my way to work at this time in the morning.
Well, but I appreciate that.
Other than just news, you know, I like shows that, you know, talk other than politics and
yeah,
you know, other crap. But anyway, before I get to my point, I was born on Halloween.
Ah.
Yeah. But the movie, I was watching it on cable, maybe you know the name of it. It takes place where this guy's locked in the trunk for the entire movie. And he only sees, like, out through a couple of holes
oh,
through the
right.
trunk.
Yeah, what is that? What is that, Tom? What is that movie?
That, I had to shut that off a couple of times and go back to it because it's, like, claustrophobia.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Oh, man, what is that movie?
And it was at the end, it was like a prank or something.
Yeah. Oh, now it's going to make me nuts if I can't think of the name of the movie. But, yeah, I understand. I totally understand because I have that claustrophobic issue as well.
Do we know how recent it was?
It's about a year ago.
Yeah, it's about it's not very old.
Is it Break, starring Stephen Dorff?
Break with Stephen. Yeah, that's it. Break with Stephen Dorff. That's it.
What is it called?
Break.
Break?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. I kept going back. It was like a car wreck, you know? You had to
I've had to do that, too. I've had to watch movies. Like, I had to stop that for a little bit because it was too much for me, and then I had to go back and rewatch it.
Just so. Like a little tweak, right?
Yeah, yeah. All right, Larry. Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Hey.
Bye. Here's Fly Jam John. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you this morning?
All right. What's up?
Well, these movies are kind of old, but to me they were brand new at the time. I was a young man. My sister and I had gone to the theater, and she left me. We got separated anyway. And I had to come home alone on a dark viaduct. Now, that was bad. But yeah. The three movies were all three horror movies. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, Dracula, and another one. I can't think of the third movie.
Uh-huh.
I was so traumatized from that I was an adult. If I were watching a Dracula movie, it was better to go see again.
Oh, is that right? It scared you that badly?
It scared me that bad. Yeah. Nick, it was in October. It was dark outside.
Yeah.
I'm about 7 or 8 years old and had to come home alone.
Yeah. I understand.
The first time I ever did it.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Yeah. All right, John, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Freaked out, man. Can't watch a Bela Lugosi movie anymore.
He's a scary guy.
I'll tell you, Svengoolie showing the mummy's hand.
Right.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something about the mummy, the original mummy. You've seen the original mummy, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Boris Karloff. Yeah, of course.
The scene in that movie that freaks me out, that really freaked me out when I was a kid and still freaks me out now, is when the guy's in the room with the sarcophagus and the mummy moves, and then the guy just freaks out and starts laughing. That freaks me every single time. When I was a kid, that guy's laughing. Because he goes nuts. He, like, loses his mind because of what he just saw. And he just starts laughing, maniacally. Like, laughing his head off. And that freaked me out. That was one of those moments in a movie that just stayed with me forever. And it still freaks me out.
I'd throw The Mummy up as probably the most outright scary of the Universal Monster movies.
It's up there. But I think the original Frankenstein is really scary. You know, Bride of Frankenstein is not as scary, but it's a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're both great.
The originals are so tragic.
It is.
So tragic.
Yeah. All right, here are movies that sent people running out of theaters. We were talking about The Exorcist. Lines wrapped around the block for the film adaptation of William Peter Blatty's best-selling novel about a young woman possessed by a demon. They quickly realized it was the cinematic equivalent of a hot pepper, something to be endured rather than enjoyed. News footage, like the compilation of freaking out. There was people leaving theaters in sheer terror. One person fainted. They were quotes of people saying, "I just found it really horrible and had to come out." One other person says, "I couldn't take it anymore." By the time the film premiered in London, ambulances were parked outside of every theater. Blair Witch Project.
This one gets me still to this day.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how divisive that movie is. Because I don't know anybody who thinks it's okay. Like, it's either you love it or you hate it. I happen to love it. I think the Blair Witch Project is a great movie. And I think it's really scary.
Yeah, and I grew up thinking it was real. I was only 7 years old at the time, 1999, just about.
Well,
all the marketing, I was just like, well, this has to be a real thing.
Well, it was. I mean, the way the movie was marketed was genius. The way they did it, it was the first movie to really take advantage of the internet, which was still kind of in its infancy, at least back in those days. And they really did a great job with it, you know, making this whole legend up. And I still think it's a really scary movie. They say launching the found footage genre with an economical story about filmmakers threatened by an unseen force, The Blair Witch Project was a sizable box office hit, remains one of the most profitable films ever made. $22,000 it cost to make the movie, and it grossed $240 million. Yeah, that's a bit of a profit.
A little bit.
$22,000 budget, $240 million gross. But the documentary-style format with actors jogging or falling over with a camera in hand prompted waves of people with motion sickness into the aisles, lobbies, and bathrooms. The Associated Press reported that Atlanta-area theaters, where they were on puke patrol for most of the opening weekend. Did you ever have at the theater when you worked at the theater? Did you ever have puke patrol?
Man, my whole life was puke patrol for a while. I mean, you just have... Sometimes things happen. You know, if they get to the bathroom, I always give them a pass.
Yeah.
I always give them a pass. But there were multiple times where people just vomited into their empty popcorn bags and just left them on the floor.
Ugh.
And I was like,
what movies?
I don't know. They would get any movies.
They were just sick.
They just would get sick. Oh. Sometimes little kids too. The mom's like, I don't know what to do. That's fine. I get it. But there were people that were like, a grown man was sitting here about half an hour ago, and all of a sudden there's just a medium popcorn full of vomit. It was just
They were saying, this is about Blair Witch. Someone threw up in the men's restroom, the women's restroom, and in the hallway. A theater manager said. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, another theater manager made announcements before screenings to please vomit outside of the theater. By the time Cloverfield's handheld photography was churning stomachs a decade later, theaters wisely posted signs warning of a roller coaster, quote-unquote, effect. Instead of barf bags, theaters handed out refunds. See, Cloverfield did that for me. Like, I all the shaky cam stuff doesn't bother me. Cloverfield, it did make me sick, but the problem was that my ex and I were pretty late to the screening. We got there right before it started, and we had to sit in the front. And it was at River East. You know the front section of those?
The neck breakers?
Yeah, you know? That's where we were sitting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you've seen Cloverfield.
Yeah, I watch it all the time, honestly.
And, the camera does not stop shaking for the entire running time of the movie.
No.
And there were parts where I just had to look down at the floor for a couple of minutes.
Catch your vision. Yeah, What worries me about those movies is I wonder if there's a risk at inducing any sort of epileptic like response.
Yeah,
that does worry me. And hopefully folks are cognizant. I think warnings should be on more of those movies because it's like that's just health.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break here. I got some weather for you. Carpenter's scariest movies, man. Prince of Darkness. Isn't that Prince of Darkness?
No, it's Christine.
Oh, that's Christine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. God, it sounded like Prince of Darkness. Yeah, Christine. Great movie. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 5. We're talking about movies where people just got up and left. I can't take it anymore. Here's another one, 127 Hours. Did you see this one, Tom?
I did. I quite enjoyed it.
It's a good movie.
I'm not a huge Franco guy, but when he has to take the arm.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No.
It's like a penknife or something like that.
Cutting through the because he gets, what happens is, here's what it says. You get what you pay for department audiences that streamed in for director Danny Boyle's account of hiker Aaron Ralston, who got himself wedged in a cave and had to amputate his own arm with a pocket knife, found themselves bearing witness to James Franco wedged in a cave, amputating his own arm with a pocket knife. Many people fainted, some vomited. One person fainted, was hauled away in an ambulance, and returned to the theater to declare the film excellent. Yeah, I passed out. It was awesome.
Well, it's kind of like a roller coaster, you know? It's like you get off the Raging Bull at Six Flags, and you're like, yeah, man, I wet myself like 8 times.
It was awesome. Yeah, and in the picture that they take of you, you're like, you're passed out, and the person next to you is having a great time with their arms up, and you're passed out.
Two thumbs way up.
Yeah. Did you ever see videos of people on those, you know, those things that shoot you up into the air where you're on the, and it's like rubber bands, like giant rubber bands where they shoot you up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are cameras are mounted on those for people. Mm-hmm. And have you ever seen footage of people pass out? Like they're in the thing and they're like, and they're bouncing up and down. And I saw one video of a guy who passed out and then woke up. He woke up like in the middle of it and was like, yeah. So I guess that's true. I guess it's a common thing. You go see 127 Hours, you pass out, and you go, that was excellent. That was great.
It was so good, I lost consciousness.
Any movie that makes me pass out, pretty good. Reservoir Dogs. It's not necessarily shocking that the unflinching violence of Quentin Tarantino's movie could prompt audiences to evacuations. 1994's Pulp Fiction lost patrons when Uma Thurman got a shot of adrenaline in her heart. You know my favorite. I love Roseanne Arquette in that scene. She's so hilarious in that scene. Actually, everybody's great in it. Eric Stoltz is hysterical. My favorite part is when they cut back to Eric Stoltz and he's in the bathrobe, and he's eating a bowl of Fruit Brute, and he's watching the Three Stooges, and it's a shemp, which I always appreciate Tarantino including a shemp. It's the one where, hold hands, you love birds, where shemp has to get married. But just like when they smash a birdcage over Emil Sitka's head, Emil Sitka played the preacher. Old hands, you love birds. They smash one of the many brides that wants to marry Shemp to get his fortune. They smash a birdcage over his head, and when he smashed the birdcage, they cut to Eric Stoltz, and he just goes, "Ooh!" Like he makes a face, like.
I do. I like him when he's dealing drugs to John Travolta. I'll take the Pepsi challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean the girl with all the crap in her face? Man, that's my wife. Anyway, Reservoir Dogs. When Michael Madsen's character began an unsolicited ear amputation, a legend in the Hollywood industry, the late Wes Craven, fled the theater. You've got to be kidding me. Wes Craven left the theater during that? The guy responsible for Last House on the Left?
Legendary for leaving.
Wow. Wes Craven's like, I can't take this. I directed Last House on the Left, but I got to get out of here. Yeah, that's something. That scene is something. For me, it's not so much the ear. It's not so much the ear part. It's what comes after it. Like when you have to see that part of his head where the ear's been cut off and he's covered in gasoline,
and just the psycho nature of Michael Madsen's performance. Yeah. I do laugh though when he grabs the ear. He's like, "Oh,
it's funny, man. It's funny." Freaks. Yeah, this is a still to this day 1932 that movie was made, and to this day it is freak out central. Todd Browning's infamous portrayal of a circus sideshow with revenge in mind was a harrowing experience for filmgoers. Not strictly a horror movie, its large cast of actual circus performers with a myriad of deformities was unsettling. Freaks suffered mass walkouts upon release, viewers unnerved by missing limbs. MGM insisted on editing the film after a woman claimed she was so aggrieved by the film that she suffered a miscarriage. Ooh. Ooh. That's terrible. You've seen Freaks, right?
I have. Well, one of us.
Yeah.
One of now, us.
That
Google
movie,
gobble.
To this day, man, that movie's 1932, and it's still... Oh. Irreversible. If you can make it past the first 20 minutes of Irreversible.
Is that Gaspar Noé?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's got a screw loose.
He does. There's no question about it. I got to say this, though, but... As brutal as it is to watch the first 20 minutes of that movie, the payoff is great. You know what I mean? By the time you get to the end of the movie. But yeah. The Lion King. What are we talking about here? People walking out of The Lion King?
Now, hold on now.
In the proud Disney tradition of maiming parents. It is a proud Disney tradition. They like to kill off the parents in those Disney movies, don't they? In the proud tradition of maiming parents came The Lion King, where tiny Simba learns to fend for himself after his father is trampled during a stampede. The animated tragedy proved so intense for younger viewers, Disney's key demographic, that they had to be temporarily relocated to the lobby until they calmed down. Now, you were a kid when you saw The Lion King.
Yeah.
But you didn't see it in the theater.
No, I saw it on tape. I watched it on videotape.
And it's one of your favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is... I guess I just...
It's the seminal movie of your childhood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of... It's hard not to think of how I react now versus... Who knows how I would have reacted then? I don't remember how I initially would have reacted.
Yeah.
But, no, my mom would put it on. I would just sit in stunned silence and just so, like, engrossed in what was happening. I guess I just saw it as part of the story.
Yeah. I can see why. I mean, there are a lot of things that happened in Disney movies and Pixar movies that are traumatizing.
Well, yeah. I mean, they killed Bambi's mom.
Oh.
Pretty.
Yeah.
Just matter-of-factly.
Yeah. And the forest fire is terrifying in Bambi. There's a lot of scary stuff in those early Disney movies.
Pinocchio.
The scene with the whale.
That. Yeah, I would not watch the scene, or when he gets turned into the kids get turned into donkeys or mules or whatever. Wouldn't watch it. Really found it upsetting.
Yeah. And then the Pixar stuff we've talked about. You know, how many times do we cry during Pixar movies? It's absurd. Like, every Pixar movie makes me cry. And then, like, Up, as we talked about before, the first 10 minutes of Up, I'm like, what are you doing? What
Heartless.
What are you trying to do to me here? I mean, it's incredibly, it's beautiful, but it's absolutely heartbreaking, the first 10 minutes of Up. I was sobbing. You know, I was prepared to cry at the end of the Pixar movie, not 5 minutes in.
That's how they get you.
Inside Out, cried like a baby during that movie. When her imaginary friend disappears, forget it. Forget it. I don't even want to talk about it. Also, it's a great movie, though. All right, let's break. All right, listen, when we come back, we are going to talk about what are the hottest Halloween costumes. And what are some of the best Halloween costumes you've ever seen, or what did you go as in the past? We're talking Halloween costumes. That's all coming up after the news, which is coming up next, right here on WGN. Oh, I wish we would have had this one earlier so we could actually hear three songs by Thin Lizzy. On the ballot right now as a nominee for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's about time. Who requested the Thin Lizzy?
It's coming to us from our good pal Dino.
All right, Dino. Good job. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here until 5 a.m. And we've got, you know, it's Halloween time. And I've got here the most searched Halloween costumes. And what are the most what are going to be the most popular? So I know, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. And also, what were some of your favorite costumes that you've ever worn or you've ever seen? You've gone to a Halloween party and saw somebody in a costume and you went, oh, that's pretty great. Tom, do you still dress up for Halloween?
That I do.
Do you?
Yeah. Just, I mean, because we have fun at, we go to parties, you know?
Yeah.
And it's more fun that way. It's, everybody's having a good time. Everybody's having a laugh. And, you know, we don't take it too seriously. I think everybody tries to outdo each other with how funny they can be with their costume.
Yeah.
I will say that a good friend of mine did a great Javier Baez. He's, he's honestly Puerto Rican himself. And he just managed to get the facial hair correct.
Yeah.
And he got the hair all right. He was a dead ringer for Javier Baez.
Was he eating 50,000 sunflower seeds as well?
He did carry around. He had a bag of, what was it? David's or something?
David sunflower seeds.
David sunflower seeds carrying him around. He had the, what was it? The eye mask stuff. Yeah. The eye paint. It was real funny.
That's pretty cool.
This year I'm going as a Severin.
It's from Near Dark?
Yeah.
Wow.
Going for the bold choice.
Wow. That's pretty good. You think anybody's going to get it?
No.
Nobody's going to get it.
But at the very least, they'll be like, okay, he's like rock and roll, rockabilly, like vampire. They'll be like,
well,
that's kind of cool.
First of all, it might get some people to actually watch Near Dark, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, I'm doing it as a public service.
You're doing it all for Catherine Bigelow.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully she'll give me a call.
You should go as Johnny Utah. Utah, give me two. Still one of the greatest lines in motion picture history. Right around the corner, there's a place, got the best meatball sandwiches I've ever tasted. Would you get me two? I mean, the best part of that is like, he's reading Calvin and Hobbes. This Calvin and Hobbes is funny. Gary Busey. And then he goes, it's time for lunch. Angelo, it's 10:30. It's time for lunch. if you ever meet Gary Busey, tell him that you like Point Break and you'll never get rid of the guy. That's how I ended up hanging out with him for 7 days straight.
I came up to him and I was like, hey, listen, I
don't want to bother you or anything, but man, I love Point Break and you're great in it. Point Break, that movie changed my life. And then that was it. And then we had two meatball sandwiches. do you remember what Keanu Reeves orders?
Oh, God. I just watched it, too.
And by the way, fastest service ever.
Yeah, from a sandwich? It was
like a truck, basically? Yeah, he walks up to the front, to like the window, places the order, 2 seconds later, boom. It's like the fastest service I've ever seen in a...
What does he order? He
gets tuna fish.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Tuna sandwich, two lemonades. I'll have two meatball sandwiches, a tuna fish sandwich, and two lemonades. And I think it's like $5.50 or something.
God, the 90s were great.
Oh, man. That's early 90s, too. That's 1991. Okay. Any surprise here that on top is it?
Not at all.
No.
I mean, 2017, same thing.
Yeah.
Kids were walking around as Pennywise left and right.
Here's a universal one, a witch. That's always a popular one, right? That's a perennial one. Girls go as witches. Number three is Spider-Man. I don't understand that. There hasn't been a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, Far From Home. Remember?
That was last year, though. Wasn't that last year?
It was earlier this summer.
Oh, was it? God, it seems like forever ago.
But Spider-Man is, you can always go with Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a classic.
Yeah, even when there weren't Spider-Man movies, people were dressing up like Spider-Man.
Or you could go as Man-Spider.
Man-Spider?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just be a man in a spider suit.
You don't want to break any copyright problems? Is that what you say? All right. What was your favorite when you were growing up? Did you have a favorite costume when you were a kid? By the way, join us here, 312-981-7200.
I went as Bela Lugosi, like Dracula, a number of years.
Yeah.
Because it was easy.
I dressed up as Dracula many times when I was a kid.
And I had the widow's peak for it, so, you know, it kind of did itself. But
yeah.
Darth Vader a lot, too.
Really?
I used to love going as Darth Vader.
All right.
Because you get to talk real low.
Do you remember maybe they weren't popular when you were a kid, but we had those cheap costumes that had just the plastic mask that you had a rubber band on it and you would just put it on your face and then the costume would just have like a plastic outfit that you would wear. Those were those cheap ones. They were huge in the 70s. Everybody had them. Like you would lift up the mask to eat your candy and then pull the mask back down. And they came in boxes, and they were real. I don't know if they're still around. Are those cheap costumes with the plastic mask with the rubber band?
Oh, yeah.
Those are still around?
Yeah, totally. Totally, totally. You can just go to, like, any of those pop-up Halloween shops.
Yeah.
Probably get a few.
How about this? Number four on the list of most searched and popular Halloween costumes for this year, dinosaur.
It's a little general, but okay.
Dinosaur. Well, you see all these people. You know, I love seeing people in those T-Rex costumes running around doing stupid stuff. You've seen those videos, right? Where people are in those stupid T-Rex costumes. It always cracks me up. I don't know why. I have no idea. But in those T-Rex costumes, the videos of people in those T-Rex costumes, it just makes me laugh. With the head bouncing back and forth. We got some calls coming in, 312-981-7200. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hi, hey, Nick.
Hey, what's up?
I think one of the most, the best one for this year for Illinois is going to be going as a bag of weed or a joint.
Yeah.
A giant bag of weed, and they'll put a bunch of, like, grass clippings or something all around.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a good idea. Only you can't dress like that in certain areas, though.
Yeah.
So, a bag of weed. All right, Paul. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah,
I can see you get chased by guys dressed as cops.
Yeah, or Snoop Dogg. Cheech and Chong. Get a couple guys dressed up like Cheech and Chong. There was a picture on the internet, and I've seen this before. There's a picture on the internet where parents took like a 3 and 4 year old. And dress them up like Cheech and Chong. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It's truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like these little kids that are dressed up like Cheech and Chong. And the kids clearly have no idea. You know what I mean? They're dressed up. They're like, I don't know.
Did you ever have people play like costume pranks when you were in high school?
Costume pranks?
Yeah. Like almost without fail, every year we would have someone dress up as two people dress up as either a guy in a gorilla suit and a banana. And you'd chase him through the hallways and be screaming like for bloody murder for help.
Oh, so the banana would be running
away.
Yeah,
the banana would be running away screaming and the guy in a gorilla suit would be running after him.
Yeah, no, I've never had that.
Or we got one year, a great one was a group of people dressed up as Pac-Man and the ghosts.
Wow.
And they ran through, did the whole maze thing, and it was great. It was really funny.
You have a very lenient high school.
You know, it's Crystal Lake, Illinois. There's a lot worse things you could get up to.
I don't even remember if people wore costumes when I went to high school. I know in grade school we did. In grade school we were allowed to.
We would do it as kind of like a
In high school, though, I don't remember. I don't remember. I didn't pay attention a lot in high school. I didn't even know what the hell was going on most of the time. All right, some of the other ones. We have generic clown. So you've got it, which is a very specific clown, and then just clown. So that's any clown. Yeah. All right. And, okay, you got to help me here. Next on the list is Descendants. What are you going to George Clooney? What?
With an Oscar.
Shanley Woodley? What are we talking about here?
So there's this Disney franchise that's really popular among kids right now called The Descendants. And it's all like all the characters are descendants of villains. So you've got like Maleficent's daughter or something like that. Or
oh, that's pretty cool. Is it on TV?
Yeah, it's like I think it's a series of TV movies that Disney has done over the last few years. Yeah. All produced in-house, really popular. If you walk by the Disney store in Michigan, it's decked out with all that stuff. So
that's the Descendants.
Yeah.
I was just picturing people dressing up like a George Clooney with a Hawaiian shirt on.
Or Beau Bridges. Alexander Payne with an Oscar.
Right, exactly. Number seven is Fortnite, which is a very popular video game with the kids, right? Fortnite? Yeah. Kids play that little Fortnite. Chucky. How do you go as Chucky? You got to get the overalls right. Now, the Chucky from the movie that came out this year looks different than the Chucky from the regular Child's Play movie. Because in the remake, he looks a little bit different. They've changed him a little bit. So I don't know if it's going to be era 2019 Chucky or 1988 Chucky. Let's see. Next on the list is 1980s. So anything 1980s? All right. And then number 10 is a unicorn. So you dress up like Walton Goggins? Okay. We got a bunch of texts coming in. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Why don't we take a break for some weather, and then we'll come back. What are the popular costumes? And we've got costumes for couples, too, that we're gonna talk about, too. So there it is. Like a banana and a gorilla. Make sure you run down the hallways of your work screaming. Hey, during the day, do people dress up here on Halloween? I'm not here, so I don't, I never know. Do people dress up here?
That's a good question. I want maybe Dave Ennett should come in as something. I don't know. Come in as like, I don't know, a football player.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
By the way, like I said, on November 1st, when the leftover candy comes in, let me just say something right now. Dave Ennett always has the good stuff. Always has the good stuff. Like if you trick-or-treat and you go to Dave Ennett's house, you get good stuff. It's not that crappy candy. That unidentified candy corn or the unidentifiable stupid hard candy in the wrappers, the cheap stuff. Dave Ennett's house has the good stuff. I mean good. So, all right. And there's always leftovers. All right, let's take a break. We are talking about Halloween costumes. It's coming up. What are the most popular ones? We've got couples costumes coming up next if you want to join us. Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. My guess is the jail. That would be my guess. There's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. Yeah, the jail. I think you can figure it out. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on WGN. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Speaking of the newsroom, we're breaking into the newsroom. Vic, you got a new story to tell us?
Yeah, Nick, developing news this morning. U.S. Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland has died. He died overnight. His office just released a statement saying he died at 2:45 this morning at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. He's obviously a fixture of Maryland politics.
probably more widely known across the nation as the chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. But again, Elisha Cummings, representative of Maryland, has died. We'll have much more in the news at the top of the hour.
Oh, that's a shame. Wow. That's sad news. Sad news. Rest in peace. And they'll give you more details on that coming up in the news. Okay, we are talking about Halloween costumes and things like that. 847 area code said, Mickey and Minnie Mouse for the little ones. They even had pumpkins to carry for trick-or-treat with ears like Mickey and Minnie. So the pumpkins matched them. 630 area code says, my sister made a dragon costume out of cardboard, paint, and duct tape. Using swimming flippers on her feet, she won $1,000 at a costume contest. I always appreciate the homemade costumes more than like you go to a costume shop and rent one, and then you go to a and then you enter a costume contest. I always thought that was unfair.
No, you got to make it out of your own materials.
Yeah. 708 area code says, I love my red Power Ranger costume.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I love the Power Rangers. Good for you.
Yeah. 224 area code says, many years ago, my husband and I went to a Halloween party dressed as a priest and a nun. Some of the dummies there thought that from their church we were a real priest and nun. Yeah, you're at a party and they think you're a real priest and nun. You're just getting drunk. Smoking. Getting drunk. Father, how dare you? All right, here's Harold on WGN. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, I'll tell you one that I saw in just a moment, but it just occurred to me that if you wore like a black ski mask and a black sweatshirt and black pants and you had a whistle, you could be the whistleblower.
Ah, there you go. And you can also definitely get hit by a car.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right, what's your costume?
So a few years back I seen I think it was about five guys, and they were dressed as Monty Python and Holy Grail. They had the whole costumes, and they had the coconuts, and they were skipping down the street.
Oh, that's good. That's a great one.
Yeah,
that's a great costume. Yeah. Holy Grail, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. All right, here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, this has always been my dream costume. I always dressed up as Dracula when I was a kid, but my dream costume, I only got one chance at it when I was a kid, but when I grew up, I got a second chance. I was him for like two Halloweens back in 2015 and 2016, Freddy Krueger.
Oh, sure. That's a popular costume. That's a very popular costume. Classic.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed.
All right, Ike, thanks. Here's Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey. I have a good couple of costume that I remember from 60 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The wife came as a brick, and the husband came as a bricklayer.
That works on so many levels, Bruce.
Okay.
That's a good one. All right, Bruce, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here is, let's see. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Hey, the ding is back. Yeah, I hear the ding again. That's good. Thank you.
All right.
Happy Halloween. I sent you a picture of this guy with the old Toots T-shirt from Toots Driving.
Okay.
I hope you got that. Well, one year I went, before I was the limo driver, I was Steve the Painter. And I had a bunch of cans of spray paint. And let's say I didn't have a lot of money for costume. So I just took an old shirt and the cans of spray paint and sprayed a rainbow on both sides of the shirt. And I think the pants, too. And that was it.
Okay. So you went as a rainbow.
Rainbow Man. I think Rainbow Man.
Rainbow Man. All right. All right, Steve, thanks.
Happy holidays.
I mean, he's a painter. He's using ingenuity there.
Speaking of rainbow, the go-to costume for me always was, it's a very easy one, you get a rainbow wig. Put the rainbow wig on and just write a sign that says John 3:16. Then you're the dude who's at all the sporting events. Is he still around? Is that guy still around?
Probably.
Rainbow Man who wears the John 3:16?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
And now I'll have to pay attention every sporting event. Be like, where is he? I once went as a lawyer, but I carried around a sword.
Why is that?
Well, they would ask me. They'd be like, well, I was just in a suit. They'd I was maybe 10 years old, and they said, well, what are you supposed to say? I said, I'm a lawyer. I'm a high-profile prosecuting attorney. And they said, what's the sword for? And I said, rending human flesh.
Why?
That was it.
Is there something wrong with you? Are you okay?
When I was 10, I thought it was really funny. I was like, well, lawyers, they should carry around swords.
Here are some couples' costumes. Lilo and Stitch. That's fun.
Yeah, that's cute. Great.
I can't believe that's number one. Number two, Bonnie and Clyde.
Classic.
Yep. Number three, Cosmo and Wanda.
Yeah, from the Fairly Odd Parents. It's a cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Number four, Adam and Eve. That you can get arrested going as Adam and Eve. That's not even a costume. That's a felony. Oh, Cheech and Chong is on the list. Especially for little kids. Mario and Luigi. That's not an offensive stereotype at all. Chucky and Tiffany. Oh, Tiffany's Chucky's the bride of, right? Sonny and Cher, still. Rick and Morty. And Phineas and Ferb.
All right.
There's just some costumes for you. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up and then the opening bell. On tomorrow's show, we got all the Friday features. Ben Anderson will be producing because Tom's going on a little trip. And comedian and podcaster and Nick D fan Daniel Van Kirk is going to be live in studio on tomorrow's show.